This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Done!
Diving into his fifth pie, Lard Ass began to imagine that he wasn't eating pies. He pretended he was eating cow flops and rat guts and blueberry sauce. Slowly, a sound started to build in Lard Ass's stomach. A strange and scary sound, like a log truck coming at you at 100 miles an hour. Suddenly, Lard Ass opened his mouth, and before Bill Travis knew it, he was covered with five pies worth of used blueberries. The women in the audience screamed. Boss man Bob Cormier took one look at Bill Travis and barfed on Principal Wiggins. Principal Wiggins barfed on the lumberjack that was sitting next to him. Mayor Grundy barfed on his wife's But when the smell hit the crowd, that's when Lard Ass's plan really started to work. Girlfriends barfed on boyfriends. Kids barfed on their parents. A fat lady barfed in her purse. The Donnelly twins barfed on each other. And the women's auxiliary barfed all over the benevolent order of antelopes. And Lard Ass just sat back and enjoyed what he'd created. A complete and total barforama.
Minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of October in the year of our Lord 2008. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's home for whimsy and amusement. It is 503-505-6964. That's a lie. Wait, now it's true. 503-505-6964. There you go. 503-505-6964. If you would like to join us today, be part of the program with your comments, questions, clarifications, ponderings, ruminations, recipes, suggestions, excoriations, threats, perversions, whatever it is you might have. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be reached at dawn@rickemerson.com. The text box open as well via Skype. That is all one word. That is just Rick Emerson Show. I'll tell you that is just Rick Emerson Show via Skype. And again, it's 503-505-6964. It is Friday the 22nd. It's lots to get through today. Just massive amounts, huge, throbbing, pulsating, glistening amounts of entertainment to get through today, including but certainly not limited to, we've got the Taser Watch coming up today. Corpse Watch coming up today. Now, is this the Corpse Watch that I sent you last night? Is that the one you already had?
This was not the one I already had, but we have replaced the previous Corpse Watch with this Corpse Watch because it's better.
Okay, so there was a Corpse Watch we had planned yesterday, and we didn't really get to it because it was just so much going on yesterday. And by so much, I mean penthouse and peeing, which we're not going to revisit today.
No.
To any, I mean, you know, I
no.
mean... Not that we're going to admit up front anyway. So we didn't get to the Corpse Watch yesterday. And then I sent you one last night. And I said, hey, is this the Corpse Watch that we have? But the one I sent you was, in fact, better?
Yes, this one's better.
Excellent. Is that the one for which we have some sound?
We do indeed.
Oh, it's awesome. All right. So Corpse Watch coming up.
I had actually already printed this one out myself, too. So we both were on the same page with this one.
That's right. We're simpatico. We're on the same wavelength. It's a kismet. It's serendipitous. Yeah, so that's Corpse Watch, Taser Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week. Also, Top 5. Today's Top 5. Top 5 songs about serial killers. So we will get to that. We've got the greatest songs ever made. We have, like fistfuls of other things. Don't forget, by the way, the Geek-O-Lantern contest rolls on. You only got like another 3 days, though. So you got 3 days to get your Geek-O-Lantern submitted to contest at rickemerson.com. That is contest at rickemerson.com. That's where you submit your Geek-O-Lantern carving, decoration, whatever it is you put together. You send that to contest at rickemerson.com. Up for grabs, whole pile of things from thinkgeek.com, as well as a $100 gift certificate. And you say to yourself, what if I should endeavor and fail? What if I should try and not succeed? What if I should submit my Geek-O-Lantern and then I am just cast aside in favor of somebody else's creation?
Pish tosh, we say.
That's right. The answer is that the Rick Emerson Show is still looking out for you, my chums, my amigos, my merry companions, my fellow travelers. You go to thinkgeek.com, and if you use the code word Emerson, that is E-M-E-R-S-O-N, at your checkout, you get a discount. I think it's, don't hold me to this because I'm just doing this from memory. And it's like $5, I think, from $25 to $49, and I think it's $10 off anything $49 and up. So you use the word Emerson, E-M-E-R-S-O-N, at your checkout at thinkgeek.com. Marty, exhausted. So much show happening. Don Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
An old woman is kicked off a plane for an inappropriate joke. There are not enough toilets for Jon Stewart's D.C. rally. And Albuquerque puts the kibosh on a porn film festival.
The actual kibosh?
An actual kibosh is put upon it.
Is kibosh Yiddish? Or is it like a truncheon of some kind?
I do not know.
I guess they could both be true.
I do not know the etymology of the word kibosh.
Let me ask you this. Whenever you're talking about words, do you have to stop for a minute and try to figure out whether you're trying to say entomology or etymology? Because one is insects and one is linguistics.
And one is a delicious purveyor of pastries.
Is that true?
Well, that's Entenmann's.
Okay, so so really one of them isn't a purveyor of pastries.
No, but you got etymology, entomology, and Entenmann's.
Okay.
And, you know.
This is like we were talking about something or other the other day. What was it we were talking about? Well, we were mentioned the other day, and you said that they were like a maker of
Mandelbrot.
Mandelbrot. We were talking about this the mathematician Mandelbrot, and you were like, and he's a Jewish guy who makes cupcakes or whatever, and it was not the case at all.
They're a delicious Jewish twice baked cookie similar to biscotti. Mandelbrot.
When you say that it's twice baked, what does that really mean?
It means that you make the dough and then you form it into a big sort of a loaf, and you bake it into the oven, and then you take it out, and while it is still soft, you slice it into the little cookies.
And then you cook
then
it again.
Then you lay them on their sides and put them back into the oven. And that's why they're so crisp.
Let me ask you this about my brethren, the Hebrews, and their foods. Do you know how to make or have you ever made arugula?
I've never. I actually tried to make it when I was in culinary school, and I failed. I did a really bad job of it. I love arugula.
That's one of the finest things on earth. Arugula,
yeah.
Or little rolled thing, which is just. It's just. I had the first time I had arugula was like, I don't know, maybe 7, 8, 9 years ago or something. And it was just. And it was like, where has this been my entire life? And the answer is, it had been kept away from me because I would weigh 700 pounds if I'd had it, like, unfettered access to it growing up.
Yeah, Trader Joe's for years, they used to have like a little plastic bin the size of those Kitty Crack cookies, a bin like that, and they had these little tiny arugula, and it was full of them, and they were quite delicious, but it was like 2 pounds of them, and it was just sort of ridiculous and dangerous to have that sitting around.
Because you're just at home with an ice cream scoop, just shoving it into your mouth.
Well, they're tiny, too, so you're like, I'll just eat one more of these. Well, okay, I'll just grab two, and then I'll put the thing back. Okay, I'll grab three, and then I'll put the thing back, and then I'll sit. Okay, I'm going to go back and just get two more.
It's like a crate of portion control foods that don't come individually bagged. They're
right.
Just in like a huge tub.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's no container has ever been more aptly named than a tub, because all of that stuff just comes in. It's like, because as you said, you're just sitting there like with those cat cookies you had from Trader Joe's, because you're like, well, they're 4 calories each. And meanwhile, it's while you're saying that, the reptile part of your brain is just like grabbing them by the metric ton and just going, and just shoving them into your giant mandibles. All right. Well, in any event, so all of that stuff is coming up. A little programming note, and I'm going to put up a blog about this later on today. There'll be a little announcement made about this online. But you all are privy. You're in the inner circle. You're behind the curtain. You're past the velvet ropes. You get to hear about this first. Starting next week, and it is going to be for 1 week only, a special broadcast next week, beginning Monday the 25th, immediately following every day's Rick Emerson program. We are going to be playing one episode of the now legendary radio drama AZ, as created by Aaron Duran and Jason Crump, the post-apocalyptic zombie radio drama set right here in modern-day Portland. So that is going to be every day starting next Monday the 25th. So we'll come on at noon, we'll do our Legion of News, about 1 o'clock or so we'll come on, we'll do the Rick Emerson Show, and then when the Rick Emerson Show ends, be it at 3, 3:30, whenever, Rick Emerson Show will end, we'll have a little break, and then we will have an episode of AZ, a different episode every day, all the way through Saturday, I guess, up until Halloween, which is Sunday. And then on Halloween, we're going to have an all-day marathon featuring an interview with Jason and Aaron talking about the creation of it, the history of it, and all of that stuff. So ever since that show specifically went off the air, and especially since we all left CBS, I have a lot of questions and emails, people asking me about AZ and if it was coming back or if they could get it somewhere, if it was downloadable or buyable or whatever. So starting next Monday, 25th, one episode of AZ every day following the Rick Emerson Show, and then on Halloween, an all-day marathon, along with a little featurette from Jason and Aaron. It's all very exciting.
It's edutational.
That's right, Don. It's not that educational. It's really just...
Edutational. It's edutainment.
Okay. I was trying to do something else. I was trying to conflate two more words on the fly, and I wasn't able to make it happen. It's 503-505-6964. We won't dally too long here because there's all kinds of stuff to get to. But I will say this right here because I teased this at the end of Legion of News. I was trying to sort of compress this into a smaller kind of bite-sized story, and that really wasn't going to happen. I just had the greatest moment last night where you realized that, like, you sort of are in the world of tomorrow, that tomorrow's technology is happening today, and you're living in the bright, shiny, Heinlein-esque future that was only promised to us by pulp magazines 50 years ago. So, because I mean, you know, you're trying to catch up on, you know, all of this, this television, and I was like, I watched Dexter, which is a thing I'm now continuing to watch. Like, and a guy totally nailed me on Facebook about this. He just said, the guy was Eric on Facebook. He said, admit it, because I mentioned that I was rooting for Quinn. But I sent this Twitter thing out a couple days ago where I just said, is it wrong that while watching Dexter, I now just unabashedly root for Quinn to catch him and stick him in jail? And I don't really have any explanation for that. It was just like as I watched the show, and it's the whole, they're basically just redoing season one where Dokes was pursuing Dexter, and then he ended up getting blown into little Dokettes at the end.
Well, why are you watching this again still?
Well, so that was the question, is I just said, is it wrong that I'm rooting for Quinn to catch him? And Quinn is just a huge douche, which indicates just like how unlikable the show and its titular character have become. And so there's a whole debate happening about it on Facebook. And one guy actually just said, he said, admit it, you want Quinn to catch Dexter so the show can be done because you're really only watching it for pop culture literacy. Like, you're just watching it so you can talk about it. You don't even really like the show anymore. And and truer words have never been spoken. I mean, it used to be that when Dexter was on, if it was in the living room or something, or if I had my laptop out there and it was playing away, I would occasionally get up and I'd duck into the kitchen to get myself, let's say, a snack of some kind. And I would leave the TV on. I would turn it up so I could actually hear the action, so I could kind of figure out what's going on. Now I don't even bother to do that. It's like if the phone rings, I have to go to the bathroom, the dog destroys something. I just, like, leave the show go, and I come back. Maybe I've missed 2 minutes. Maybe I've missed 10. It doesn't really matter. Because the show just has so few redeeming qualities at this point. It is just, it's become like drudge work, where I just watch it so that if somebody asks me if I've seen it, I can just say, like, yes. And on the off chance if it becomes interesting somehow, like if the quality just magically returns to it, then I'll be there to catch it. But I don't expect that.
Has it?
No, and it's not going to. And that's the thing. I'm not a fool. I understand that that is a road to nowhere. That's not going to happen. But, you know, so now it's just this sort of thing. It's just like this sort of... it's just this sort of zombified behavior that just continues on past its point of expiration. You know what I mean? It's brainless and lifeless, yet walking forward one step after another. So I've just been watching all this TV and trying to get caught up on stuff. And I had read this article about... This is a long way to get to what I'm going to say, but I had read this article about the upcoming fourth season of Californication or whatever, which I don't plan on watching, but It was just at the end of the evening, I was getting some stuff done, and I thought, well, you know, it's been a while since I've actually watched the earlier episodes of that show. I'll watch something for the first season. This is how lazy I am. I didn't feel like actually going and digging the DVDs out of the pile that were like 5 feet away from me on the other side of the office, because that's way over there. And meanwhile, I'm sitting at home in like my ass-grooved chair. So, you know, why bother to get up? So I have my laptop in front of me, so I just go to Netflix, where you can stream the first season of Californication. And so I go to Netflix, and I'm like, you know, and I put it on. So then
I'm laughing at you, but I have to say I've done the same thing. I did the same thing with Deadwood. I have, like, Deadwood on DVD, but it's all the way on the shelf, like, up above my TV. I could just watch it on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, it's only slightly out of arm's reach. I mean, if I just had leaned forward a little bit, I could have picked it up. But it's like, then I got to open it, and I got to put it in my laptop. You really understand how we are going to be so easily overthrown by the Chinese, like, next week or whenever they decide to do it, because we've just become weebles. I mean, just sitting here just rocking back and forth. I'm like, I can't get up. Bring me some cookies in a tub. So anyway, so I go on Netflix last night, and I'm streaming the first episode of Californication. And then I put off feeding the dogs for as long as possible, and it gets to be like 11:30. And I'm like, well, all right. They're just going to start taking the house apart if I don't feed them. So I, you know, but meanwhile, I can't detach my laptop and take it into the kitchen with me to continue, because the dogs take forever to eat. Like, Max will eat in 2 minutes, but Philo takes like 20 minutes to get the food down. And, you know, I'm toward the end of the episode, but I can't take the laptop with me because I'm busy backing up my hard drive, and it's a whole thing. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do? Take a book with me? Read? What am I going to think while the dogs are eating? How will I cope for the next 9 minutes if I can't take this electronic entertainment along with me? I've basically just become like a Wall-E character who needs to have like a sort of, you know, mobile entertainment device everywhere my big fat egg-shaped ass just goes, you know, like in a big sort of spongy protoplasm chair. I can't be, you know, away from my electronic amusements for even a moment. So then, I actually think to myself, and then it ends up being a colossal investment of time. Like, I could have just fed the dogs and come back. But then what I end up doing is I just take out my iPhone and I say to myself, I wonder if there's some sort of a Netflix app for my iPhone. And sure enough, I'll be goddamned if there isn't a Netflix app for my iPhone. And check this out. Here's how awesome this is. Not only is there a Netflix app for my iPhone, which is free, which will stream. Not only can I reorder my queue and order things, it'll actually just stream things directly to my iPhone with its fantastic Retina display with more pixels than a human eye can even register. But if you are watching something on your laptop and you pause it and then you go to Netflix via the app on your iPhone, you can actually just start playing where you left off. I went there and there's just a big button that says resume. And I said, yes, I think I will. And so it was yesterday on this show. It was just yesterday that we were talking about like that House of Tomorrow that like Bill Gates has. Yeah. Or you were mentioning somebody else who had like a chip put in his arm so the house tracks where he is. And I was talking about in Gates' house, anywhere you walk in Bill Gates' home, it registers where you are and it's turning speakers on and off as you walk down the hallway so the music stays with you at the same volume level but nobody else has to hear it. So I'm basically doing a rudimentary version of that at my home last night, where I'm in the home office watching the TV show. I pause it and then immediately take out like my pocket screen, and then I'm walking down the hallway of my home because I can't bear to be away from the television for even like 5 minutes. That's how useless a human being I've become. That is how utterly pointless my existence now is. I mean, there was a time when I was going to like accomplish things, get stuff done. I was going to make a difference in this crazy world. That time has passed. Because now I can just take, I could just take an episode of Saint Elsewhere with me, like if I have to go take a whiz somewhere.
Well, I was supposed to be like you today. That was my plan. Because the last thing I talked about with you last night after the show was over was that I had gotten a paycheck from a former employer that I'd forgotten I was going to get. And I was like, all right, that's it. I'm going to the AT&T store. I'm getting that iPhone. And then my husband basically talked me out of it. Because he was right. He showed me the numbers.
Was this more of that look at our bank balance, we can't afford to eat thing?
It was more of a look at our bank balance. Things would actually be a little more comfortable if we had that extra money so we could buy like food and stuff this week. Yeah. So, but then he also said he gets paid the end of next week. He gets paid on Friday, next Friday. And he's like, but we'll have like plenty of money then. And we can definitely do it on next Friday. And then he says, and it'll be your anniversary present.
that you are purchasing with your own money.
Yeah. So now, because he's decided that he's pushing this back towards, like, to, like, right before, because our anniversary is Halloween.
This is like a three birds, one stone kind of a thing.
Yeah. Now the thing that I was going to buy myself anyway
will now be his gift to you.
My anniversary present.
Well played, Patrick. Well done, sir.
So then I looked at him and said, okay, well, then I'm getting the 4 and not the 3GS if it's an anniversary present.
And then he
looked at me and I realized he was trapped. He was trapped in his own web of deceit.
You'd done like a sort of Kasparov, like a Sicilian Open, where you'd forked his bishop and his knight or something.
Yeah.
He had no way out. So this is, no, just to step back for a second, explain what you mean when you say you'd gotten money from an employer you'd forgotten about.
Well, I had been writing for Sena Medical for a long time, and last month I decided that I was, you know, for various reasons of my own, there's nothing wrong with Sena Medical, but I just decided that I had too many balls that I was trying to keep in the air. And so I wrote them a letter and said, you know, basically, it's not you, it's me.
You're a great company.
It's been great writing for you.
Anybody
it's been
be
swell,
lucky to work for you.
But I've got all this other stuff going on, and it's too stressful for me trying to, you know, maintain that. And so, because it was, as I talked to you about it, it's like, you know, I had to figure out when I was going to write these blog posts and what they were going to be about. And I couldn't, like, you know, it used to be that you could, like, go onto the queue for the blog and say, I'm going to write about this and this and this. And it was a placeholder. And then you could come back a couple hours later and post it. But the thing is, I don't have time to do that because I'm here doing this in the middle of the day every day. So, yeah. So just like I walked away from it. So it's fine. But what happened was, is I basically essentially forgot that I was going to get paid for the month of, let's see, so this is October, so I guess
it was in the pipeline from some time
ago. It was either my August or my September work, and I still had like a check coming, and they basically automatically do a direct deposit. So I got my little email from AOL, who owns Sena Medical, saying, oh, here's we're dropping this money in your checking account. And I went, oh, I forgot.
Like finding money in a coat pocket.
And so, yeah, so I was like, found money. Woohoo! iPhone. And then Patrick was like, well, you know, actually, if you don't spend that money this week, then
that is fantastic.
We can buy food and put gas in the car. And something I was like, but it's like, and I'm like 10 years old. I'm like, but it's extra money. It's extra money they didn't even have like an hour ago.
By the way, can I just tell you? The text box, I'm going to look over here, the Skype thing, and it is just like every guy in the world, Patrick is now their hero. Because he has so neatly threaded the anniversary gift needle. She says, Dawn's husband is made of win. Well done. So by delaying it, he actually gets to keep the money in the bank account longer.
Right.
And he is now freed from the obligation of getting you an anniversary gift because he is going to let you purchase the thing for yourself next week that you were going to actually purchase for yourself last night.
Right. And then call it and then say, happy anniversary, honey. You have an iPhone.
That is fantastic.
And now I want to know, does that mean I also now have to get him a gift, too? Is my anniversary gift the thing I was going to buy myself anyway, and he gets a gift from me as well?
Were you planning on buying... If this had not happened last night, were you planning on buying him something?
Probably not. We don't really...
You're not a gifty couple.
Well, we're not really a gifty couple, and also just our anniversary is just kind of weird anyway, because we have two wedding anniversaries. Because,
right.
You know, it wasn't legal the first time, so we had to do it again.
Is this like that? Is this like when the Howells found out that the guy who married them was a fraud?
Kind of. It was, I moved here with my first husband, and we separated amicably, and then we came here to Oregon and realized it would cost us $300 to get divorced. So we went, screw it, we'll do it later. So, like, 7 years later, I meet Patrick, and we get engaged, and I go, I need to actually get divorced. And so my first husband and I, we went, and we filled out all the paperwork, and then we found out that there was this sort of ridiculously long waiting period of, like, 6 to 8 weeks, because Oregon, I think they may have changed it, but Oregon was one of these states where they would punish you for getting divorced.
Right.
And so we realized that my divorce wouldn't be final until like a week after the wedding we had already scheduled and sent out the invitations for. So we just had the wedding anyway, and it was a lovely weekend at McMenamin's Edgefield, and people came from out of town, and there was drinking and merriment, and we didn't tell anybody that it wasn't actually, you know, legal. And then we had the guy, Dr. Don, if you watch cable access TV here in Portland and ever see a very kindly man in a powder blue turtleneck sweater talking about ethics.
I know exactly who that is.
Dr. Don was our humanist officiant for our wedding.
Awesome.
And he came to our house then. And the first wedding was on like October 7th or 8th or something. We can never remember what the date was. Then he came to our house on Halloween and performed another ceremony.
The actual ceremony.
And that one, yeah, that one we signed the papers and that one was actually legal.
So this is, well, I would say that you are not obligated to get him something if it's understood that you wouldn't have been earlier. And in fact that he is postponing your gratification.
I mean, last year was our 10th anniversary and we did nothing to celebrate it at all. So.
Yeah, and it's the thing with like Laura and I, I think we actually wrote it down at one point, but for several years, neither of us could remember what our anniversary was. We knew it was in September at some point, but it was, we'd already been together for like 10 years, and it's like, not that the wedding was not important, but it was like it was part of a whole week that we were spending in California, and it was like the service took like 7 minutes or something, and it was on the beach, and it was just like between beers, we're like, I don't know, the 25th, 21st? I don't know. I got nothing. So we don't really, by the way, just on the issue of me, it was just so astounding. As I would pause the television show, and then pick up my my iPhone, and then immediately, and it's like you were like, I know that there's science behind it. Like, yeah. I don't know how it works, but I know that it's not like voodoo. That I would just pick up my iPhone and it would magically, which is the word I always use, even though I know it's not, that it would just magically remember exactly what scene I had been watching.
Yeah.
And then I would sort of walk down the hall. Somebody says, here, Rick, you're not alone. I usually go without eating all day until I start feeling starving because I don't want to walk up 2 flights of stairs to the kitchen to make something and be without anything to watch or listen to while I cook. And I don't want to lug my laptop off 2 flights of stairs while I make food. Even when I go to the bathroom, Rick, I crank my laptop up so I can hear the Rick Emerson Show or other podcasts even while I'm using the restroom because I can't stand to be without electronic entertainment for more than 2 minutes. So there you go.
Oh, I also want to address the people who think that my husband is like a hero for the whole way he finessed the anniversary thing. This is a guy, when we started planning our wedding, we were looking at like the first week of October or the end of September, and he wanted us to try and get married on September 25th because that's my birthday. And it's also his mother's birthday.
So that was...
So there would only be one date he would have to remember for those three things.
This is a multitasking again.
Yeah.
This is, just get him some groceries for your anniversary. Sounds like that's more important to him anyway.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes, exactly.
I got your food and shelter, jackass. All right. So I hadn't mentioned this because I didn't know what the outcome of it was, but you had said yesterday... You had said yesterday in the kitchen, like, so I think I might get one of them their iPhones. So this is, so you will not be getting that this weekend.
No.
So probably a week from today, next Friday, you'll be getting the iPhone.
Yes.
All right. I would just say block out the rest of your week and make no plans because you're just going to, this last thing I'll say about it because we got all next week to look forward to that glorious time in your life. First of all, we get to look forward to two things. One, is you being a little bit of a flak jacket for me for a while and just taking some of the excoriation from the like the Android folks.
Yeah.
So you can be the recipient of their ire for a while. The other thing is, once you get the iPhone, and it's people who have, maybe Android folks are the same way or, whatever. Talking to a guy last night, he has the new BlackBerry Torch, which he seems to quite like. But I know that with the iPhone, even when you don't have any reason to, occasionally you'll just take it out and just look at it and smile. And then you'll just sort of, stroke it. You know, you'll just sort of pet it like George petting one of the bunnies, and then you'll just sort of have a little, kind of a straighten up and with a little grin on your face. And then you'll put it back in your pocket and you'll go about your day. So you have that to look forward to. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Taser Watch, Corpse Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week, Top 5 Serial Killer Songs, Greatest Songs Ever Made, all that. On the way, the Rick Emerson Show brought to you today by The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. Mr. Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution, who can, of course, clean your home or your business. We will talk more about that later on. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
And I actually do have a breaking news.
Really? Actual breaking news?
Actual brand new breaking news.
There is your breaking news for Friday on the Rick Emerson Show.
A beachgoer has died in a shark attack off of the Central California coast, and 3 beaches are closed. Authorities say the victim of the deadly shark attack was a bodyboarder whose leg was bitten off.
Yeah.
Santa Barbara County Sheriff Bill Brown told the Lompoc Record newspaper that the 20-year-old was attacked this morning at Surf Beach in California at Vandenberg Air Force Base. Brown says a friend on a surfboard got the victim to shore, but he bled to death. Brown didn't identify the man, but says he's from Orange County and attended the University of California, Santa Barbara. Surf Beach is on the property of Vandenberg Air Force Base, but is open to the public. Vandenberg says the base closed the beach and two others for 72 hours. This is the first such attack at Surf Beach since 2008, when a shark bit a surfer's board. A great white shark killed a woman in 2003 at another beach about 30 miles north of them.
So there you go. There's your breaking news. Shark attack kills man off California coast. Hear it now on the Emerson News Network. Here is Don Taylor.
Arizona Representative Paul Grijalva's Tucson office was evacuated on Thursday after staffers discovered a package filled with images of swastikas and what was later confirmed to be a toxic substance. Grijalva wasn't in his office at the time, but 12 of his staffers, none of whom reported any injuries, were. "I do feel a great deal of concern for the people that work with me and for me," he said. "I feel concern for the constituents that come to that office." A spokesman added that this is the third security problem the congressman has dealt with this year. In April, an unnamed caller threatened to, quote, "blow everyone's head off" over Grijalva's stance on immigration. And last July, a bullet was fired through the window of his office. "It's just a continuation of a problem we've been having," Grijalva said of yesterday's incident.
Waving it away as though it were a cloud of mosquitoes that was irritating him ever so slightly. You know, on our worst day here, we don't really, and I'm not encouraging people to begin this, we don't have toxic substances mailed to us.
No.
I mean, except for those Chipotle things
from
General Mills. But, you know, the bullets aren't whizzing through the studio here.
No.
So, you know.
We don't take a real hardline stance on immigration, though.
No, it's, you know, and I'd like to think that we would have a rational discourse about it as opposed to, you know, receiving a package of plutonium in the mail. And that he is just so, like, nonplussed by the entire thing. Is sort
of swastikas and powder.
What are you going to do? All right. And here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
An elderly woman was removed from a plane at Denver International Airport Wednesday and questioned by police after she made an inappropriate comment on board Southwest Airlines Flight 3687 while it was at the gate. It seems that when the woman handed her bag to a flight attendant who was helping her, she jokingly said, "Oh, be careful with my bag. It has a detonator in it." The flight attendant later said another passenger made the statement, "If that was me, they'd have thrown me off the plane." So they couldn't just ignore it because it was an old woman. A passenger told a Denver news station that her impression was the woman had misused the word detonator and meant defibrillator or some other kind of medical device.
Was there, in fact, a defibrillator in the bag? Do we know?
That I don't know. The flight attendant told several passengers the woman might have been on some medication that clouded her thinking. Another passenger said he'd seen the woman earlier and thought she had Alzheimer's or some medical condition. The flight was delayed for about 45 minutes while officers removed the woman's items inside the plane and her luggage in the baggage compartment. The plane was traveling from Denver to Raleigh-Durham.
I do like the idea that she was sort of being considerate about it, though. You know, that on the one hand, indicating she had, you know, an explosive device, but on the other hand, didn't want it to cause a trouble, you know, a ruckus for anybody or trouble. And so you should, you know, handle this bag gingerly, please.
Be careful. It might blow up. Oh, did I say blow up?
Don't jostle my luggage, please. And here's Don Taylor.
The calls of nature may be particularly loud at an upcoming D.C. event if attendees don't have a place to go. Comedy Central organizers are having a hard time finding enough porta-potties for their rallies to take place in a week and a half after the Marine Corps marathon planners snatched up about 800 of them for the same weekend. The organizers of Jon Stewart's Rally to Restore Sanity and Stephen Colbert's March to Keep Fear Alive, both to take place Saturday, October 30th, have asked the Marine Corps marathon staff to share the public portable toilets with their 665,000 expected attendees. But the Marines aren't budging. They plan to lock the toilets until the morning of their race, the day after the rally.
This is going to be the best day ever. I love the idea of tens of thousands of people descending, many of whom undoubtedly loathe, you know, all of the other attendees. And also there's no toilets to be had. And the few that are there are locked up and they're surrounded by Marines.
The National Park Service requires portable toilets for events expected to exceed capacity of comfort facilities on NPS property. They recommend one toilet for every 300 people. An NPS spokesperson said that Comedy Central should be able to get more porta potties in the greater D.C. area.
And incidentally, I think one toilet for every 300 people seems a little on the scant side. Imagine working in an office building with 300 people where there was one toilet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, look, the bathroom here is busy a lot. And there's like five people who work in this entire structure. So,
well, surely you've been to some sort of an event where you've had to like stand in line to get to the damn porta potty. Like, you know it's going to be hell when you get into the thing to begin with. And then you have to stand in line with a bunch of, like, Jimmy Buffett fans or something.
Rockfest. Boy, you just seriously, you want to talk about just being dropped wholesale into the ninth circle is just going into a Rockfest toilet. I mean, it is like looking into the abyss. It is like looking into some Nietzschean blackness of the soul that I cannot even begin to express in words. It's like looking, it is a Lovecraftian portal into despair. I mean,
I will say, 17 years working at a Renaissance fair, wearing like the long sleeves and the three skirts and the outfit. And then we'd get something like 26,000 people a weekend to the thing, and it's, you know, 100 degrees out, and the only facilities are porta potties.
Well, and also, like at a Ren Fair, you got to go into the, you know, you've got the long flowing robes and everything, too, and you're having to make sure that your business is out of the way.
Exactly.
And here's the thing is, chicks got it really tough, and I admit this, guys just have it better in general, but specifically in the issue of toileting. Have I told you my whole thing about toileting is a verb? Was that on the air?
Yes. I think you did on the air.
The toilet is a verb is hilarious. But when it comes to time to toilet, Dawn, men really have the advantage of not having to touch or lower yourself near, for at least half of your bathroom activities, anywhere near the actual physical structure, that cannot be overstated. Because, you know, men, they just got that big funnel thing that, you know, for the whiz. And it's, you know, and then it's the whole thing. This is the only comment I'm going to make about this. But it's that whole thing of like...
talking about pee again.
Yeah, but we're going to stop right after this.
Okay.
That I know over the years we've made advances in the art of toileting, where it's now everything in the honey bucket thing, which is the worst. I don't know whether honey bucket is worse than porta potty, I don't know which of those is the more off-putting. The honey bucket thing is almost worse because it's... Because that ain't honey. And so it's like your brain is conflating of them.
It's a horrible phrase.
Yeah. I mean, it's my brain is trying to mash those two phrases together and those two concepts. It doesn't really work.
When I worked at the Renaissance Fair, the company that provided the toilets was the something-something Gump company. So we just referred to them as Gumps.
I gotta go take me a Gump.
Yeah, he was over by the Gumps. Well, I was in one of the Gumps, and I couldn't get my damn skirt out of my underpants, you know, that kind of thing.
And it's that whole thing, it's where you, how do I put this, where when you go into one of the Gumps or the honey bucket or whatever, and when you're in there, let's just speak honestly as humans here, it's not like you want to look.
No.
But at the same time, you don't want to act, but you don't want to accidentally, like, lower yourself onto or near any sort of, you know, whatever, foulness or just, you know, just like, you know, if like somebody is like left with bits of tissue or something, like, you don't wanna, so it's like you have to do the cursory ocular sweep where you sort of look around and go, and you do a recon for, you know, for any sort of detritus. But then, but it's right in your field of vision, so then you get the whole, like, technicolor view of everybody's lunch, and it's just, it's no good. It's no good at all. I'm just saying. Okay. That's a relatable topic, Don.
Also, again, 17 years at the Renaissance Fair, we camped out all of the weekend, and you had to use them at night. And so you'd go in at night with your flashlight, and you're having to look at everything with your flashlight to make sure that, you know, it's safe.
This is my final observation about toileting. I had a friend of mine when I was, I don't know, maybe 19 or 20. I don't remember where the hell we were, because, you know, I'm not the camping as Evan Danda would say, I'm not the outdoor type, so I don't really know. I don't know where the hell I was. I think I might have been conned into going to some sort of horrible country fair type thing by some chick that I was dating. It was in this place called Tenasket, which is an awful, horrible, hippie-filled small town in Washington. It's just filled with like dust and clay pipes. Anyway, so we went to this this like little swap meet Ren Fair, come buy a bong kind of a thing. But I think we were obliged to spend the night in like a tent or whatever. But anyway, my friend Rob, who seems to figure into a lot of these stories in this period of my life, I don't know why he had them with him in the first place, but he dropped his car keys into the toilet. And then I just told him, like, he came back and he didn't even get the sentence out of his mouth. He's like, hey, dude, so I dropped my keys. And I said, I'm not going to help. And he goes, but they're in the side. I know what you're going to say. I'm not helping. I'm not assisting. That's your problem, not mine. I drove here in my own car. You're getting home. have fun, because I'm not going to lend you a hand. And the last thing, and this is an image that will just stay with me until the day I die. I will be on my deathbed having forgotten my name, the names of my family and loved ones. I won't remember the year. I won't know what planet I'm on. The last item to be expunged as God reformats my internal drive will be just me looking across this sort of grassy dirt field at my friend Rob walking toward like the honey bucket Gump thing, and just sort of like unraveling a coat hanger as he went.
God.
And just thinking to yourself, he's about to have the worst 15 minutes of his life. And we've never discussed it. I never asked him how he got the key. He's never volunteered. It's like just one of those, like, it's like what happens when you go to prison for a few years. Your friends don't ask and you don't volunteer. It's a thing that just stays inside you. You don't share that with others. There's never been a more appropriate time, friends, to talk about the cleaning solution. Michael Beatty can be reached at 971-533-3211. And I suspect, although I cannot prove, that blue dye that they have in the portable toilets, don't you think that just stains horribly?
Sure it does. It's there to try and... I don't even know what that's supposed to do to keep... I don't even want to talk about this anymore. I'm horrified.
Here's another horrifying thing. Did you realize that blue dye water stuff they put in the toilet, it's exactly... It looks just like the stuff inside a Magic 8-Ball.
It also looks like the stuff they use... at least they used to use in the maxi pad ads.
Right.
And also diaper commercials to show like how absorbent things are. They pour blue liquid on things because they know there's nothing in actual nature that comes out of your body that's blue. So I guess they figured that'll be the least offensive thing for them to show you the thing soaking up.
So you won't equate it with any actual bodily function.
Right.
I'm weighing this question.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. I know you're not filled with blue liquid or anything.
You think I'm not filled with blue liquid. You don't know that.
I guess it would really take some sort of a thorough examination. I'd have to get my forceps to find out for sure. But I mean, you know, I'm not going to ask. Never mind. I'm just going to stop that right now.
I want to know what you're going to ask.
In terms of the feminine hygiene products, look, clearly you're not dealing with a blue substance of any kind, but no. It seems like just pouring blue water is also not, it seems like in terms of the actual properties of the substance, that's also not representative of what you're dealing with,
not
right?
Not really, no.
I mean, there's no point to showing that. Here's my theory, is those commercials, they are designed that way solely for the comfort of men.
Yeah.
You know? Because men, you know, because it's like, as you said, just a very light blue water, basically. And so it's like the least unsettling substance they could put on the screen because it has nothing to do with reality in terms of, like, composition, density.
Well, I remember when I was growing up, there were always these ads on TV for like, Summer's Eve.
Yes.
And it was, like, the disposable douche thing that you get. And they would show you the bottle. And I remember it was, like, and it's this convenient-to-use thing because the neck of the bottle is tilted, they would say. It's at an angle for ease of
application.
Except the thing is this, they never in any of the TV commercials showed the actual nozzle. They would just show the bottle and then like the neck of the bottle, which is about an inch long, was out. So I remember finally asking my mom once, it's like,
Mom,
how does that work? How? Because I kept imagining you had to like lay on your back in the tub or something and pour it into yourself because I was like, my mother said, well, there's this nozzle. And I was like, what do you mean? And she had to explain to me about the nozzle. And I'm going, well, why don't they show that in the ads?
You know, here's the thing is, as you are relaying this conversation with your mother, of course, in my mind's eye, I am picturing it in that washed out 70s, color scheme. And there's like a little bit of flute music in the background. And it's like you and your mom in your own like Massengill commercial. Mom? Why don't they ever show the nozzle? You know, and then it just cuts to you using like a system of pulleys and levers in the bathtub.
Because I was so confused. Just like, I don't know how they get that into. I understand what it's supposed to do, but I don't know how it works.
Mom, do you have any stirrups? When you say
I stand on my head and you can just dump this, you know, into my private area. I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
shake me, you know, like a
McSalad.
Like one of those paint mixers at the hardware store.
Okay. Hey, everyone. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. They're on the Emerson News Network. News having perhaps a different meaning in this context than is traditional. Michael Biddy loves this program and everything about it. His family has never been more proud of him. His family, they say, Michael, we are so glad that you've got a business, you're making a go of it, and that you've chosen to advertise your products and services via the Rick Emerson Show, where a woman was just recently compared to, quote, one of those paint-mixing things and a McSalad. You can reach Michael Biddy if you like at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. If for any reason, not that we've given you any cause to believe this might actually be the case, if you've stained anything in your home, which sounds like you might actually stain, like any number of processes or activities might result in an inadvertent spillage of liquids, maybe blue, maybe not. You know, maybe leave the details out when you call him. Maybe just blame it on a neighbor who was over, or just say that it was a foreigner and it happened when you weren't at home. And then let him just come over and you know, get it out of the rug or wherever. 971-533-3211 for your home, your office, business, or residential. I would imagine if this is happening at the office or, you know, at your place of business, perhaps there are, you know, there's a conversation with HR happening in your future, so you might want to get that sort of squared away first. 971-533-3211 for carpet, upholstery, hardwood tile, flooring, anywhere, whether it is the mortar, the caulking between the tiles, wherever it is you find that your feet are touching and the grime is accumulating. It's 971-533-3211. Mr. Michael Biddy, the cleaning solution.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, so we'll do a couple more news stories here. We'll take a break here in a moment. We'll do the greatest songs ever made. Coming up here later on today, we have Stupid Criminal of the Week. What else? We have top five songs about serial killers. That's on the way as well. It is the Rick Emerson Radio program. Don't forget, starting Monday the 25th, for 1 week, we're going to be airing an episode of the legendary radio drama AZ, the post-apocalyptic zombie drama taking place in modern-day Portland. That'll happen every day following the Rick Emerson Show up until Sunday, which is Halloween. And we'll be doing a back-to-back marathon all day long featuring an interview with Jason and Crump and Aaron Duran, who are the creators of that fine program. This, however, is Ms. Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our corpse watch.
All right, then. Here's your corpse watch right here in the Rick Emerson radio program for Friday. You know, the corpse watch is the one I can never find. It's sitting somewhere right here on the... here we go. Here's your corpse watch for Friday.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Zooming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is your corpse watch for Friday.
Police say a woman drove for months with a mummified body in the passenger seat of her car. According to the Orange County Register, police discovered the body after they responded to a call that a 1997 Mercury Marquis was parked illegally. When they approached the vehicle, officers said they could smell a foul odor and noticed a leg underneath several pieces of clothing. The officers broke into the car, found the mummified remains of a 50 to 60-year-old woman believed to be a transient from Fountain Valley. Investigators said the driver of the car had befriended the woman at a local park and allowed her to sleep in the car overnight. When the woman discovered the woman died while inside, she continued to drive the car with the body at her side.
Like you do.
Police Sergeant Ed Everett says the 57-year-old former realtor also explained how she could stand the smell.
She initially told us she had some sinus issues, and she had indicated her father, who is elderly and he is currently in the hospital, was incontinent and defecated and urinated in the vehicle, and she had indicated she had become immune to the smell.
Wow.
Police say the body was in an advanced state of decomposition, and the woman died 3 to 10 months earlier.
Are you kidding me? I thought it was just like maybe like it would like been earlier in the day or something. Or
No. 3 to 10 months.
How long? What do you suppose her plan was? Was it just to sort of drive the car for many, many dozens of years until there was just dust in the back seat or something?
Wait, officers also found a box of baking soda that the driver had used to try to dissipate the smell.
You know, if I were Procter & Gamble, I would get on this right now. It's like there's a ringing endorsement in their future.
The real estate agent driving the car, said she was apparently afraid to contact authorities and continued to drive the car.
Yes. Yes, I would imagine she would be.
It was surprising even to myself. I've been a police officer for 15 years. To find a mummy in a vehicle, it was very, very shocking.
Now, sometimes when they say mummification, they're meaning something else, like just dehydrated or whatever. It sounds like they might actually mean that here, though.
No, they're actually saying the conditions inside the car, which I guess they mean it was like warm and dry or whatever inside the car, appears to have affected the decomposition process, and the body was found somewhat preserved and mummified.
All right, then. So it's sort of like, it's like like with a guitar. You just keep it in a cool, dry place.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. There's your corpse watch for, Jesus God almighty. The arm and hammer baking soda, that box, does it say where in the car exactly it was placed? Was it like in the glove box?
I'm not sure there's any place in the car that would be better than any other place.
No, I guess it's all relative. All right. There you go. There's your corpse watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones.
Jesus God.
Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
God almighty. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Coming up a little bit later on, we have your Stupid Criminal of the Week and also the top five serial killer songs of all time. Let's do one more here, then we'll do the greatest songs ever made.
The provocative film festival Pornotopia has been postponed because the city of Albuquerque, New Mexico, doesn't allow adult entertainment at the festival's proposed site. With months of planning, researching, and now no place to go, co-director of Pornotopia Molly Adler said the film festival's status is unclear. Because of zoning, even for one weekend, we're not allowed to have the festival downtown, she said. Adler calls the Festival of Erotic Films art. The past 3 years, it has been held at the Guild Theater in Nob Hill. The city said this year's proposed site is not zoned for adult entertainment. Adler said, "We're talking about a free speech issue. How can you actually exercise your free speech if there's nowhere in town that you can legally have the festival?" Pornotopia organizers said they want to have their festival at the Sunshine Theater near downtown Albuquerque. The theater, however, isn't considered downtown, so it's not zoned for adult entertainment.
Hey, that reminds me of this. Last year, did I miss this somehow? Was it like a homemade porn festival that they had?
Yeah, I think so.
Like the Mercury, somebody did that?
Yeah.
It was
I remember something about
folks making their own hump films, and then it was like shown at the... wherever. I forget where.
Yeah.
I want to say the Clinton Street Theater, but maybe that's just because I associate that with that. Maybe not. So is that a thing they do every year?
I don't know.
That was I somehow just like slept through that entire thing. I think we've entered a strange time in America. Not a bad time. I'm all for it. I'm just saying it just seems like, and this is like the second day in a row where the show just consists entirely of just porn and pee, I guess. So, whatever.
I'm fine with talking about one of those things.
This story, Pornotopia just reminds you that this last year, I think it was the Mercury, because I think it was an offshoot of the thing The Stranger did in Seattle, because I think Dan Savage talked about it, where it was just like readers of The Stranger, which is the sister publication to the Portland Mercury, just making their own homemade porn. But you think that that's a thing that has kind of a niche appeal. They're like, how many people are really just going to, opt to put that on a big screen somewhere? And apparently the number is large. Apparently that's a lot of people who are opting to do that. By the way, our friend Seamus weighs in, and he says, instead of that whole douching thing, he says, someone should just build a sort of, lady parts car wash device that women can pay $2 for, and then you'll be pulled through an enclosed automated cleaning system on a conveyor of some kind. Somebody should build that. I honestly don't know the motivation behind that comment or not. I don't know whether he really thinks that that's a bold step forward for science and for hygiene or whatever.
Or if he just wants to watch it.
Or if, yeah, or if it's just like he's thinking that, you know, that then he can be the guy who then charges $1.99 to watch it for a month or something. Okay. Well, there's...
You know, somewhere there's a guy that's his dream. That's his fetish.
Probably. Well, I mean, it would be, you know, it'd be the same guy that sits at home, you know, with the human centipede, you know, Blu-ray, you know, just making an entire, like, a weekend. Can I just tell you this? Then in the last couple of days, I have somehow had conversations with three other people, maybe four of us all together, three other people who have all got copies of The Human Centipede, that movie sitting at home. None of us have watched it. It just sits there, and we look at it every now and again, and we kind of go, nope, not tonight. And then we just, go back to watching, you know, whatever.
I watched it.
I mean, is there any need for me to view that film?
No.
Is
no,
it
not
just...
really. Oh, if you've seen the trailer,
yeah.
You know what it's about. And then you go, oh my God. And then, you know, the movie is that, except that it's like 90 minutes of it. So it actually, it's surprisingly boring, actually.
Because it is. I mean, it's just about this guy who just stitches folks together, sort of one end to another, sort of. But it's just like, it's just an hour and a half of that. Yeah. It's like a feature film of that.
I mean, the guy who plays the crazy German scientist is really good, and he's really super creepy. But the movie itself is not, once you get past the premise, there's really nothing else going on there, and it's just, you know.
Yeah, Seamus.
You kind of go, okay, ooh, ick, and what else? Nothing? All right, I'm bored now.
And now I'm getting questions for you in the text box about the actual physiology of the human centipede and the scientific underpinnings of it. Because wasn't the whole thing about the movie like it's 100% scientifically accurate?
I don't know about that.
Which is just, you know, that's just some of that William Castle, you know, you have to, you know, Rumble Rama thing where you have to sign like a waiver in the front lobby because people have died while watching Mant.
Yeah, this was written by doctors.
All right. That conversation came up because, and then we'll take a break here. We'll do Greatest Songs Ever, which I hold here in my hands. Coming up later on today, we've also got, just in case you haven't been horrified enough, we've got a taser watch on the way. I swear to God, we've got top five serial killing songs. Mm-hmm. Later on, we got Stupid Criminal of the Week. All of this is going to be vile and off-putting. Let's have no illusions about that, you and I. Let's speak together as men about that and just be honest. This whole conversation came up because I was talking to Seamus about something or other. He and I are up. Do you ever get that thing? And I know this sounds like we're lovers or something, but with Seamus and I, we have that thing where, do you ever be emailing with somebody or you're texting? And you do sort of sense like you are the only two people awake. Like it's so late at night and your email is kind of slowed down. And I get a lot of email because people listen in different parts of the world or whatever. But your email's kind of slowed down. You're not really getting any calls. And it's like you're emailing back and forth with somebody, like figuring something out or working on a problem or just having a conversation about whatever. And you get the sense that like everyone on earth has fallen asleep but you and like this other person. Mm. Anyway, so Seamus and I have very similar sleeping patterns. But we emailing the other night and I was talking to him about – I was watching something. Like I was watching Dexter or whatever. And I was like, oh, I'm just Finch and Dexter. And he's like, I really like to watch Dexter, but right now I'm watching all four House films. And I thought he meant like all four seasons, like the first four seasons of the show House. And I stopped for a minute and I said – do you mean House, the horror film with William Catt and George Wendt and Kay Lentz and Richard Mall? Ding Dong, You're Dead, House? And he just said, yeah, I've never seen all four, and I was just wondering how they could possibly get four films out of that concept. I'm just going to watch them all back to back tonight. And, like, that was his evening. It was just apparently, you know, coding or whatever it is he does for a living. He has some vague sort of thing that involves making, like, I don't know, he's doing something complicated with, you know, machines. I don't know what it is. I just picture him as like a Dr. Octopus guy in his house where he's just got like huge, you know, like mechanical, you know, like robots surrounding him all the time. And he's just, you know, and he's got like a bank of supercomputers that look like NORAD. But then he's just watching all four House films back to back, which just seems like a retarded way to spend your time. No offense. But then I said that I couldn't really pass judgment because like earlier this year, I watched all six Saw films back to back. For no reason, just because I felt like I should.
Yeah, I use technology for the stupidest possible things. I mean, it's like I've got the Netflix, so I have the Netflix streaming, and I can watch anything I want. They have like a gazillion movies on Netflix. I could be catching up on classics. I could be catching up on like, you know, Asian extreme horror. I could be doing all kinds of like things that, you know, would actually, you know, grow me a little bit as a person. What am I watching? I'm watching Lifetime movies.
Yeah.
I'm watching movies like, you know, My Pregnant Daughter Has Two Husbands, you know, starring Valerie Bertinelli.
I've never seen Lawrence of Arabia. Not once in my life. I've never seen Gone with the Wind all the way through because I'm busy watching all six Saw movies.
Yeah.
And then, like, eagerly anticipating when, you know, when the 3D one is going to come out, and can I possibly figure out a way to make the 3D experience work in my home?
I have to admit, I actually thought about doing that with the Saw movies, though, because I saw the first couple and I didn't like them because mm-hmm. I don't like that kind of movie, the kind of torture porn stuff.
Thing, yeah.
But then I was writing something for I think Cinematical, and I had to look them up on Wikipedia and saw this thing about how, like, there's this whole through story through all of them, and then I became actually genuinely curious about the fact that they actually attempted to have, you know, sort of a universe that this all takes place in, and a through story for this character and the chick who yeah. is, like, becomes him. And
it's here's the thing about the Saw movies is that, first of all, they're almost all terrible. I mean, they're almost universally like from front to back. I mean, I didn't really care for the first. I saw the first one with Aaron Duran, and I didn't really like it.
Love that actress, though, that used to be on, like Becker with Ted
yeah.
Danson, and then she became the victim-turned-serial killer.
And then one of the other villains in the Saw series was on Picket Fences. The first one I didn't really care for, and then the second Saw, what's notable about the second one. The second one stars that guy from Showgirls that's going to teach Elizabeth Berkeley to dance. You got more talent than anybody I ever seen. Dancing ain't effing. It's that guy.
Yeah.
He's in the second Saw film. And then also, I interviewed Tobin Bell at one point, who plays Jigsaw. And he shows up on the West Wing every now and again in reruns, which is sort of great because he's just got that creepy Saw voice. He's also a little league coach in real life. And he says that occasionally he'll just, this is so great about this guy. He told me this in the interview. He said, and the kids aren't supposed to see Saw, but they all do because, you know, they're kids and that's what they watch. They watch horror films. And he said that occasionally, as he's like, this is so effed up, as he's working with these like 10-year-olds or whatever, he'll be standing behind the kid, like showing him that thing of like where you're mirroring the kid's posture and showing him how to swing the bat. And he'll say, all right, now, and this is like the Jigsaw guy. And he'll say, all right. Hit the ball or strike out. It's your choice. Live or die. Which is sort of great. And he doesn't do it all the time. It's just enough to F with them. You know? Choose your fate. But the Saw films are simultaneously so poorly written and so unbelievably bad in terms of just like their acting and the directing and just the leaps of improbability. I mean, it's not even like suspending your disbelief. It's like you are attaching disbelief to the billion seagulls from James and the Giant Peach, and it is sailing away into the sky. So they're so badly written. The writing is so pedestrian. And yet at the same time, the plot is so labyrinthine and connected because, as you said, it is effectively one story told over six movies that are released a year apart from each other. I mean, it has become like Harry Potter, where the first 20 minutes are just backstory and flashback. I'm glad you said that because I've actually thought the same thing. In a way, it's really impressive and surprising that they are able to get away with this. Because if you were just to start watching with like Saw 3, you would have no idea what's going on. I mean, I actually have to go back and sort of like watch some of the early ones every time I was watching one of the later films. I'd have to go back and it's amazing. And yet,
and most of these movies, they just in a franchise like this, they will take the basic premise and then just sort of redo it, but it'll be a standalone film,
right?
You know, they don't actually, like, carry characters over from the previous films. They don't attempt to actually, you know, grow the characters and have them, you know, morph into other things. They don't have any character development. And as awful as the Saw movies are, they actually do that.
It's astounding, actually. So, I mean, you know, hey, I guess, you know, good for them or whatever. But and then you just get the strangest actors who appear in Saw, like Julie Bentz from Dexter and Darla from Buffy. She was on there. And then I forget the guy's name. He played. Did you watch Gilmore Girls?
Yeah.
Luke, the diner owner.
Yes.
So like Luke's on there as a cop. Yeah. And then I don't know if anybody cares about a spoiler. But at the end, you know, of course, the thing about it, you know, and it's that thing where they never planned on making a sequel, you know, and after the second one, they thought, OK, surely people are on to us. You'll pardon the pun. Jig is up. People have realized these movies are terrible. And so every movie is, I think, done to be sort of the end until they got to the third one. They went, oh, my God, people, these fools are actually watching these things. Let's milk this for everything we can. So they then had to resurrect characters who were dead and just, like, write themselves out of these scenarios that were totally impossible.
Well, and one is like a prequel, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's like, and presumably all of the Saw movies, they all involve just these massive habit trail traps, you know, where it's like people are having to navigate their way through these insane puzzles.
And the kind of thing that makes absolutely no sense. Yeah. And you're going, how did one person could not have built this?
Well, they go like, and where is this warehouse? Yeah. Like, where? I mean, it's like, you know, I don't think they've ever said where it takes place, but I get the impression it's in New York. And here's the thing.
And what did you? And it's like I always thought when I see movies like Daredevil, where you see his fabulous apartment with the secret room and the stuff, and he's blind. So you're going. And I always think this same thing with the Saw movies. Like, what exactly did you tell the workmen that you had come in and do this?
The contractor came in.
You obviously didn't build this yourself.
I mean, it's like a studio apartment in Manhattan is like $1,500, and also you can't get one. And yet he's got this thing that's like the size of the moon, basically. But at the end of like Saw 5, I think, it's the Luke Gilmore Girls guy. I don't know. He's like in some weird room that is basically like that garbage compactor on the Death Star, where it's like the walls close in and then he's like, you know, and then he's squashed and then he like gets power hosed down a drain or something at the end. So, you know, that's how you do that. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Say, if you're going to be building a doomsday device, death machine, maybe some sort of a dungeon, maybe you're going to be building a series of highly improbable and implausible moral and ethical dilemma machines, all of which seem to involve, you know, like whirling blades or, you know, things that just spray acid or are filled with rats or something. You might want to call Squires Electric about that. Then again, you might not. I mean, I can't say definitively. I mean, I can speculate, but I would just be postulating at this point. I don't really know the answer. So pick up the phone, maybe not now, maybe later when I'm not in the building, get a hold of Squires Electric. Or you can go to their website. You can find them online at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. Or their phone number is 503-252-1609. This is like that whole conversation in Clerks about the... About building the second Death Star, you know, where it's like they got to, you know, like the first one they had forever to build, but the second one, like you got to get that done in record time. Yeah. You have to import labor for that, basically. And there's no explanation how they do that. And like this, the guys who are building, the second Death Star or even the first one, is this some sort of like a Manhattan Project thing where like nobody knows what they're, you know, like he, as far as somebody knows, he only puts a spring in a box. He doesn't want to know what the final product is. So he has plausible that he can sleep at night. It's like having one empty gun, you know, when you're executing a guy. Nobody wants to know that they're actually working on the Death Star. Back to Joe Squires, though. 503-252-1609 is the phone number for Squires Electric or Squires Electric. .com if it has to do with wiring of any kind, and that's not just electrical wiring sometimes. And we say Ethernet wiring, it's not like you're going to move into a place necessarily and you can't get Internet access. Sometimes you just need it to be upgraded because if you got a lot of people in there, you're doing a lot of online and broadband work, people who are doing any sort of video editing, if they're having to upload and download massive media files, you're just going to find that the wiring in the building is insufficient. And these guys know what they're doing. They've been doing it for over a decade, and we've talked about the fact that it's difficult. I mean, it's not like you can just grab yourself a roll of duct tape and a pair of pliers and then just go like, I'm an electrical contractor. I mean, that's the thing. The state makes you jump through any number of hoops to do that, and you got to have a lot of education. You got to pass the test. 97% of the people just fail the test outright. I would imagine of that 97%, probably half of them just go home and drink themselves blind and never leave their home again. You just sit there just weeping, and just don't even attempt it. Joe Squires didn't have to navigate, any of that. Didn't have to thread that particular personal needle because he passed it first time, right out of the gate.
No drinking, no weeping.
That's what I'm saying. And free estimates when they come to, look at your home or your business, trying to figure out what it is you're going to need and the best way to do it so you know about how much it's going to cost you before anything is done. 503-252-1609 If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. There's Squires Electric, 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. In just a moment, we'll do the greatest songs ever made. Top five coming up. Top five serial killer songs. Also, stupid criminal of the week. Don Taylor, what other stories are we tracking on this very fine Friday for the good people of Portland?
That's a good question, Rick Emerson.
Is it ever?
Is it ever? Brett Favre's wife has been talking about, you know, Brett Favre's penis. Since we're talking about porn a lot lately, turns out Clarence Thomas, obsessed with porn. And, of course, we do have the taser watch.
You have no idea, by the way, how much all of this is... this is either the best or worst day, if possible, to do this greatest songs ever made. And I was actually going to do the greatest songs ever. I wrote this for yesterday, for Thursday. And we kind of ran out of time. And then I was looking at this and I thought, maybe this is going to clash in terms of tone. I'll do it Friday. Friday will be a show of clean living and purity. It'll fit in perfectly there.
And yet,
I've now realized that that day is never going to come. That's the carrot at the end of the stick. That's a treat that we'll never reach. So I might as well just embrace this. I will say, coming up here in just a bit, we will have Stupid Criminal of the Week. Also, Taser Watch. Don't forget, coming up Monday, following the Rick Emerson Show, beginning Monday, that is October 25th, we're going to play one episode of AZ every day following this show. And AZ, if you did not hear it the first time around, was a live, it's going to be, these are from the archives, but it was broadcast live, a live radio serial, an ongoing radio drama that we originated from, our studios at 970 with Jason Crump and Aaron Duran being the sort of masterminds behind it. And it was written, directed, produced by, arranged by, all of the music, all of the acting, everything was live, local, in-studio Portland actors. So I ran for a couple months. We had seven episodes total in the can, so we're going to do one episode every day starting next Monday as we lead up to Halloween. And then on Halloween, which is Sunday, we're going to do a back-to-back marathon all day long, also including a little interview with Jason and Aaron where they talk about the history of the entire thing. So if you missed AZ the first time around, if you heard it and you liked it, and I get these emails a lot, people wondering where they can hear it again, it's going to be right here on the Emerson News Network starting Monday the 25th, following this show, one episode per day leading up to a marathon on Halloween. One final note, don't forget Monday is also your last day to get your Geek-O-Lantern submission in. You just do that through contest@rickemerson.com. That is how you submit that. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm Rick Emerson, and these are the greatest songs ever made. As we noted not long ago, George Carlin once claimed that the only good thing to come out of religion was the music. Well, religion giveth and religion taketh away. While Christian faiths don't typically believe in parallel worlds or alternate paths, one can at least imagine them. What might have been, what might have come to pass, if only. In this case, how things might have turned out if it hadn't been for a place called Carthage, or a town called Nauvoo, or any of the million other locations, things, and events which inexorably led to the settling of what is now Utah by Mormon pioneers. If you aren't familiar with the story of the LDS trek across the states, don't worry, it's not important to your understanding of this. Mormon culture, whether you view it as good, bad, or just, you know, there, has played a huge role in influencing American culture. The church also exerts a tremendous influence on its followers, more so than most contemporary Christian sects. It was into this culture, in a place called Ogden, Utah, that Alan, Wayne, Merrill, Jay, Jimmy, Donnie, and Marie Osmond were born. It was in this environment that they heard, loved, and eventually began to make music. It was from this place, a bastion of devotion, faith, and unyielding obedience to family and authority, that the Osmonds emerged to conquer, for a short time at least, a portion of the American music scene. Though it might be difficult to remember or imagine now, depending on your age, the Osmonds were once an artistic and commercial force to be reckoned with, and not just behind the Zion Curtain, as the Utah borders are sometimes known. The Osmonds sold millions of records. They played to packed houses everywhere. They attained levels of stardom typically associated with top-tier rock bands and prefab pop groups. And they did all of this without falling prey to the industry's usual sins. The Osmonds didn't drink or carouse or destroy their talent with substance abuse or find themselves consumed by the million other dangers lurking within the realm of intensive fame. And while we're mentioning things that are typical within the industry, we should note another fact, one that further sets the Osmonds apart from their peers. In an era and in a genre when professional studio musicians and songwriting mills created most teen pop, churning out singles like so many toys on an endless line of assembly, the Osmonds, especially as their career advanced, wrote, arranged, played, sang, and produced the overwhelming majority of their songs. Songs like the one you're about to hear. They also squabbled with their record label, with their family, and with each other about what direction their music should take. Should it be rock? Should it be pop? Gospel? For one bright shining moment, it was all three. Soon, the pressures caused by serving the dual masters of music and faith would be too much, and the group's phenomenal expressiveness would come to an end. But while it lasted, they created a handful of songs that simply were excellent. And this is important, songs you might not ever spot as being by the Osmonds. As you hear today's track, try to forget everything you know or think you know about the group. Forget the almost hilariously clean-cut image they later projected. Forget the TV shows and the 100-person family appearances on Oprah. Forget what happened when they were swallowed by a culture that, for good or bad, smothered their musical aspirations. Instead, listen to the music itself. Listen to the loose but tight jubilation found in the chorus, like a gospel choir surrounded by guitars. Listen to the, and I am quite serious when I say this, Grand Funk Railroad-style verses. And when that chorus comes back again, listen for a fearless, evocative voice ringing out from the background. It's a simple, well, all right now, from a Donny Osmond who is too young to drive, too young to work, but quite able to, well, is no other way to put this, to sing his ass off, frankly. And ask yourself, what would this amalgamation of Rolling Stones and Redemptive Salvation have become if the culture that created them hadn't eventually reclaimed them? How would they have sounded five albums later? What could they have done? What if? We may never know, but there are hints, there are indications left behind in recordings like this. One of the greatest songs ever made, this is The Osmonds and Down by the Lazy River on the Emerson News Network.
Nice and easy. You know it won't be long.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Did you see that? I think it was on Oprah. Did you see the thing on Oprah where all of the Osmonds, like all of the living Osmonds from Ogden, were on stage at one time?
No.
There was like 175 people.
Wow.
I mean, it's just absurd.
Did you ever watch the TV movie about the
yes.
Osmonds?
Yes, I did.
It was actually really pretty darn well made, actually.
You know who
was
in that movie?
Interesting.
It was Bruce McGill, who played D-Day, who I kept calling Emmett Walsh the other day.
Yeah, he played Dad Osmond.
Yeah. Meryl... No. Meryl was... See, it's that thing again where they all... And they run out of names at a certain point, and so they just start doing, like, junior and senior and the third and whatever.
I did like, though, that how they really addressed... I think it was Alan, wasn't it, who just... His annoyance at the direction that the family business went in, and how he just kept getting pushed out and disregarded, even though, you know, he was the one that actually had something of a business sense.
Well, and it does make you wonder, like, if you could have just picked up the Osmonds like some sort of a plant and then, you know, put them somewhere else when they were all, you know, it seems to work for them and whatever. Yeah. You know, and look, they're famous and I'm not, and so, you know, have at it. But if they could have grown up in some environment where that was just not such a smothering influence.
Well, same thing with the Jackson 5. If you could have just taken all of those kids and all of that talent
away from
crazy dad.
Seriously. I have always thought that somebody really, really missed out by not putting Michael Jackson and Donny Osmond on a record together. Because, I mean, they were just, you know, the people have talked about it a lot, about the Jackson 5 and the Osmonds were so much, they were just sort of, you know, they sort of mirror image of each other in so many ways. And Michael Jackson and Donny Osmond had such similar singing styles. And somebody got to do that now. I mean, it's like I would, you know, just as an experiment to see what it sounded like, you know, just sort of trying to, you know, using, you know, science to just do something, just merging the two of those guys onto a track together. There's actually there's that great scene, which did really happen, apparently, in that Osmonds TV movie where their dad is, he doesn't want them to record, the song, God, is it One Bad Apple? It's one of their kind of, teeny bop songs. You know, one of their early kind of bubblegum recordings.
ABC.
Wasn't ABC, because it was something where it was obviously just bubblegum nonsense, and the dad was trying to insist that it was about, you know, perversion and promiscuity. and I guess that was a pretty big struggle. Have you ever heard that song Crazy Horses that they did?
No, I don't think so.
It's the weirdest song. It's like it sounds a lot like the Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin. And the idea that the Osmonds would ever record anything that would be confused, with Led Zeppelin is sort of astounding. But anyway, we got the top five coming up here in just a short while. We'll do the top five songs about serial killers. We also got the Stupid Criminal of the Week, Taser Watch on the way, all of that. This is Don Taylor.
Let's do our Stupid Criminal of the Week.
Here is your Stupid Criminal of the Week, brought to you by Mugshot List. .com. It is by mugshotlist.com, run by our good friend and listener, Andy, covering...
What?
You just said that you were...
Oh, I was just trying to remember something. I remember watching the Donnie and Marie show when I was a kid, and one of the songs they did a cover of Honky Cat, Elton John's Honky Cat. Yeah. But they changed the line of how it's like trying to drink whiskey from a bottle of wine, and they changed the line to like, it's like trying to eat cherries. I was talking about from a strawberry vine. That's like, it's like trying to eat something from a strawberry vine was the way they changed the line.
The Osmonds are like, they're like a living, breathing, dubbed for television movie sometimes when you see them interview, where you think people can't possibly talk like this. And then they do. You know, and I guess this goes without saying, but when you, the weird thing about being, it's not weird to that, I guess, but the weird thing about being in Utah is how everywhere you go, like, every third business is, like, Osmond something. You know, it's like Osmond Motors or, like, Osmond Furniture. And they just, I mean, they just walk across that land like gods. I've actually been to Osmond Studios, which is, I mean, it's like they really are, it's like a Scientology kind of thing, where they've just got everything. They've got their own soundstage, multiple soundstages, their own recording studio. They've got their own record plant. I mean, they record, mix, master, and produce and package to sell all of the records, like, right there at their compound.
And again, all thanks to Alan Osmond, who just kept pushing them and going, we should have our own studio.
Yeah.
We should go back to Utah. We need to get out of L.A. and go back to Utah and produce our own records. Everyone's like, I don't know, Alan.
It's crazy
I don't
talk.
Know if that's a good idea.
He really is the brains of the outfit. No getting around that. Mugshotlist.com brings you this stupid criminal of the week. Mugshotlist.com covers 19 counties in Oregon, 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. Always adding more counties and states. And in just a moment, we will announce the winner of this week's Mugshotlist.com full membership. Here is Dawn Taylor.
I very stupidly did not drop the audio over into the Dropbox.
Is that going to be there in just a moment?
It will be there in just a moment.
All right, fantastic. Seen any good movies lately?
No.
All right. Okay. I will...
It's in the Dropbox now.
All right. And then I will, in just a moment, have the winner of your mugshotlist.com full membership prize. That'll be coming your way in just a second. Here is Dawn Taylor.
All right. Two would-be thieves in El Paso, Texas, failed in an attempted jewelry store heist that involved a plastic garbage bag, a kitchen knife, and a getaway wheelchair. Noemi Duchenne, 44, and Luis del Castillo, 45, arrived at a store called Estate and New Jewelry on Tuesday morning and made preparations to rob the store. Del Castillo pushed Duchenne to the parking lot of the store in her wheelchair, where she covered her face and upper body in a black trash bag with eye holes cut out, then got out of her wheelchair and entered the store. Inside, she pulled out a 12-inch kitchen knife and demanded that she be given, quote, everything. The store owner, Linda Bradley, opted not to cooperate with Duchenne and pulled out a pink lady's stun gun. Bradley chased the masked woman around the store for a bit.
That's the stupid sound here. All right, let me just...
And this would be Linda Bradley.
All right.
You couldn't be terrified when somebody can't really run and they have a bag on their head. We're chasing each other around like Keystone Cops. I knew that I could outrun her because she was obviously not very quick. And so then she's mad, and I'm saying, get out of here. And she's going, you get out of here.
Wow. Everybody in this story is smart.
After chasing each other around for a bit, Duchenne was finally taken to the ground by another customer who held her until police arrived. Del Castillo patiently waited outside with the wheelchair, and he was arrested as well.
All right, so walk me through again, because I think these stories move so quickly. Walk me through how it is that she comes to be running around the inside of the store with a bag on her head.
Well, the two of them lived nearby in an apartment complex.
Right.
And I think maybe because she was disabled in some fashion, it's my opinion from reading the story that perhaps they decided that the quickest way for them to make a getaway was for her to go into the store, rob the store, go back out, get in the wheelchair, and then he would probably push her very quickly away in the wheelchair.
Okay, all right.
So he pushed her to the parking lot in the wheelchair where she disguised herself by putting a large black plastic garbage bag over her head.
It's an interesting variation on the usual definition of disguise.
And then, got out of her wheelchair, walked into the store, and pulled out a knife and attempted to rob the store. And then the store owner pulled out a stun gun.
And is chasing her around, and also she's disabled and has a bag on her head.
Right.
You know, when you describe her having a bag on her head, I'm picturing her as like Mushmouth, Fat Albert. Just sort of, with eye holes and sort of a crudely.
All right. The pair are being held on aggravated robbery charges, which makes Noemi Duchenne and Luis de Castillo our stupid criminals of the week.
Congratulations. Sort of. That is the Stupid Criminal of the Week, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. And, of course, our winner this week will get complete access to all of their searchability. We'll be able to browse mugshots by categories like county and gender, and we'll be able to view unlimited pages. And that winner is Christy Marks. Christy Marks, you. Yes, you. You are the winner of the mugshotlist.com full membership for this Stupid Criminal of the Week.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A former Secret Service agent says in his new book that he nearly shot President Lyndon B. Johnson hours after John F. Kennedy's assassination. In The Kennedy Detail, Gerald Blaine recalls standing guard outside the Washington home of newly sworn-in President Johnson in the early hours of November 23, 1963. Blaine says he heard footsteps approaching, he picked up his submachine gun, and in the darkness pointed it at the chest of the man who turned out to be Lyndon Johnson. Blaine writes that the enormity of what had almost happened left him chilled. He realized that 14 hours after losing one president, the nation had almost lost another one by his hand.
Imagine, and again, this is in the past, by the way, because, of course, Rick Emerson and Don Taylor wish a long life and the best of health to all elected officials and all government employees everywhere. We do not advocate any kind of harm coming to them in any way. Isn't that right, Don?
Oh, absolutely.
But imagine just, if you will, just put yourself... Imagine being the guy who accidentally machine guns the president.
Yeah.
I mean,
you don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's no explaining that. There's no sort of...
Crap!
what do you suppose you would say, actually? Just, God damn it. I mean, there's really no expletive strong enough for that or intense enough. And there's no amount of overtime you can kind of put in at the office later to kind of...
No, you are so fired.
You don't even put that job down on your resume. It's not like you just fudge about it. Like, you would leave that number off altogether. I wonder what Lyndon Johnson did, because Lyndon Johnson, he was sort of... not a bad guy, but he was notorious for having a bit of a temper. Sometimes that he was known to, for example, demean members of his staff by making them take meetings with him while he was sitting on the toilet.
And he picked up his dog by its ears.
Yeah, but you know, he claimed that that's how the mama dog does it, Don. Mm. Anyway,
because he was from Texas, so he probably didn't overreact around guns.
No,
put that thing away, son.
Did you ever see the pictures of Lyndon Johnson sort of at the end of his life when he was, he was kind of getting on in years when he was closer to the end than the beginning? He just turned into this weird sort of like Kesey-esque hippie. You see these shots of Lyndon Johnson after he left office and when he was just sort of in exile, I guess Richard Nixon was the next, but just sitting around like his ranch or whatever. And he like... he just had like this sort of like long flowing like, hair that was like down to his, that was like down to his shoulders.
Kind of a Wild Bill Hickok sort of a thing.
I was going to say that or like a Ben Franklin kind of a thing going on. So I don't know if it was like a throwback to the Founding Fathers. He was just like, F it, I'm done, and he was, just sitting around just,
That's what you're going to be like, isn't it? When you're an old man.
You mean with the F it, I'm done or with the hair?
Both.
Maybe. Well, I've said for the longest time that as I get to be an older person, I'm going to begin to use drugs on a daily basis. And I'm going to start... See, and I think it's sort of the reverse of the swinging two deck bats in the on-deck circle, where it's like you get on there and, the bat feels especially strong. It's by not doing drugs now, they're going to have, I think, a much stronger effect when I actually become an old person.
You'll appreciate them all the more.
And it also means that I'll be able to work my way up with something real mild, like just, like a few more aspirin than I would normally take. Then I just start hitting the bong every day. Mm-hmm. Then I go right to... what would you say is next? If I were working my way up to like...
Maybe a little Tylenol with codeine, something like that.
Okay, sure.
Start using the prescription pain meds, because you'll be old, so you'll be able to get those fairly easily.
That's true, and I'm not going to be risking any sort of imprisonment, because they probably just, give me the prescriptions like nobody's business. And the end, I would say, is probably... Would you say crack or heroin is really at the end?
I don't know. My dream is basically to get something that will enable me in my last few years to go to one of those hospices where they just keep me loaded up on morphine all the time.
Now, but you wouldn't even really be – when they give you morphine, are you awake as such? In other words, are you conscious of like, oh, this is awesome, I'm on morphine? Or is it a thing where you're just basically asleep and so therefore you're almost not getting the pleasurable payoff?
Well, my only
payoff.
Experiences with morphine were after getting my hip replaced, which was a good practice for when I get old. It was kind of a combination of like, damn, this hurts so bad. I'm going to push the morphine button. And then you have the thing where you go, oh, yeah. Oh, that feels okay. That's better. The pain goes away, and you go, and you are just flooded with this feeling of well-being, and then you pass out, then now, you go to sleep.
Does the button? You know, you see those guys on the in the movies or whatever, and they're like clicking the morphine button. Does it actually work? I mean, does it give you more morphine?
Yeah, but the reason they do that is that way you don't have to have the nurses coming and going and medicating you all the time. But it's on a timer.
So
the thing is, it's like you click the button, but that you can't get another one for like 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever they set it for.
So it takes a while for that to be refilled. Like it's not like it's like a bird feeder the guy only visits once a week to sort of add more seed to.
Kind of, yeah. You click the thing and then you wake up and you go, ow, I'm in pain again. And you go, nothing's happening. Crap. And then you wait a little bit and you go, let me try it again. Okay. Apparently it's been time.
So have you ever tried, let me ask you this, have you tried is your only experience with morphine when you had your hip replaced? In other words, have you tried it when you didn't need it?
I've never tried it when I didn't.
I wonder how much better it would be then.
I did get a shot of morphine when I was in the emergency room once after I'd injured my knee and my kneecap had blown out. And so they were giving me they gave me some Valium and they were trying to relax me so they could pop my kneecap back in and they couldn't. And then the nurse came by and said, okay, we're going to try giving you some morphine. And I said, seriously? And she said, oh, yeah. And so they shot the morphine and it was awesome. And I remember the doctor came by and said, in the way, that condescending way doctors do, said, so, how are we doing?
How are we doing today?
And yeah. I looked at him and I said, well, you know, other than my knee still being effed, I'm great.
We're awesome. We've never been better. Yeah.
I'm still damaged and I can't walk and I'm laying on a table in an emergency room. But other than that, the morphine, two thumbs up.
How long does it take morphine to kick in? Like if you got the
if you're getting it IV, it's almost immediate. It's like as soon as it hits your bloodstream, it's like boom.
Fantastic.
So
that's my plan when I'm an old guy. As soon as I'm retired or whatever, once I get to a point where I feel like I have either done or not done whatever I'm going to do or not do in my life, there are no big changes coming for me, then I will just begin. I'll start working my way up the drug pyramid.
Well, if you're going for the illegal drugs, you should definitely, once you're old and you don't care about the law or your health or anything anymore, I would suggest for you, you actually try cocaine.
Oh, that just seems fantastic.
Because you love stimulants.
I really
do. You love the caffeine. So,
yes, I do.
So you get like the sense of well-being from the opiate along with the speediness. So I could see you enjoying that quite a bit.
I'm going to start canvassing people just now, and maybe just planning it out, sort of, getting it all structured and whatnot.
Yeah.
All right. Here is Don Taylor.
It's good to have a plan. Lillian McEwen dated Clarence Thomas for 5 years in the late 1980s, but when his Supreme Court confirmation hearings came around in 1991, she chose to stay quiet as allegations of sexual harassment threatened his seat. Now, with a new memoir coming out, the retired D.C.-based prosecutor has had a change of heart. In an interview with the Washington Post, McEwen confirms many of the claims that were made during the hearings, that Thomas used to view female colleagues as potential romantic partners, that he once asked a coworker about her breast size, and that, quote, he was obsessed with porn. He would talk about what he had seen in magazines and films. McEwen adds, if there was anything worth noting. McEwen says she's still friendly with Thomas on the rare occasions that she sees him, although she doesn't expect their friendship will survive the interview she just gave. I have no hostility toward him, she said. It's just that he's manufactured a different reality over time. That's the problem that he has. In related Thomas news, a conservative group founded by Thomas's wife, Virginia Thomas, has stopped referring to Obama's health care law as unconstitutional out of concern that the issue may appear before the Supreme Court.
The thing about Clarence Thomas's wife is, I guess it was, I'm unclear about whether she just did this or whether it was the story just came out. I feel like it happened a couple years ago, but the story has just now been released. Like she herself gave an interview or something about it, where I guess Clarence Thomas's wife actually like called Anita Hill and left her a voicemail a couple years ago and just said, hey, so this is Clarence Thomas's wife, which has got to be an awkward phone call to make anyway. She called Anita Hill and left a voicemail just requesting that Anita Hill make a public apology.
Yeah.
So don't you think it's time to make a public apology? Come on. So, but that was...
And Anita Hill said, no.
What a strange time in American history that was. I remember just sitting there. What year would that have been? That would have been like, what, 90?
It was 91.
91? And just, it was like during the whole Monica Lewinsky thing, where it's like, Dan Rather would be on television, and there's semen on the dress. And I was just... And it was like, I would be like, am I dreaming again? What world have I fallen into? With that Clarence Thomas thing, where there was that whole insane conversation about whether he was discussing pubic hairs on his Coca-Cola can.
Well, and then Anita Hill was just demonized publicly for bringing this stuff up. And it's like, it was pretty, it was horrible. It was really, really horrible. And it was just a horrible case of just a woman, basically them attempting to destroy a woman for, you know, for being a victim.
It was the strangest, it was the strangest time. It was one of those things. It was sort of like, I mean, and I only draw this comparison not because of even like, you know, the race aspect, but just because it was around, I mean, it was 2 or 3 years removed from the whole Rodney King thing. And it was just one of those like, the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill hearings were like the Rodney King case in that it was a thing that like, whatever the truth or untruth of the allegations, it was a thing that we all knew, that everybody knew went on, but just it had never really been thrust into the public spotlight before. Like, you knew cops just beat guys senseless. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows that. Hell, I'd beat guys senseless if I could get away with it sometimes. So it's like, you know, it wasn't like a big secret that the cops just give a guy what for with a baton half the time. But, you know, but it's a thing you just kind of knew in theory, because it probably hadn't happened to you. And if it did, you probably weren't going to tell anybody about it because, like, you didn't want the cops to come find you and beat you again. So it is with the Anita Hill thing, where it might not have happened to you, and if you were a guy, it probably didn't. And if you were a woman, it happened to you, you probably didn't bitch about it too much because you didn't want to get fired.
Well, what was really interesting about the Clarence Thomas hearings, too, is that one of the big arguments that people get making is like, well, he's, you know, been nominated for a seat, you know, on the Supreme Court, U.S. Court of Appeals. And like, so what does it have to – so maybe even if he did, like, you know, come on to this chick, if he did flirt with her, if he did say these crude things about, like, giant penises he saw in porn movies, you know, what does that really have to do, though, with his fitness for the job? And it's like the thing that nobody ever seemed to actually discuss was the fact that his current job, the one he held while they were accusing him of this, was as chairman of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Yep.
You know, the people who, like, are in charge of sexual harassment. The people who are supposed to investigate sexual harassment.
I'm glad you're not subjected to that kind of conversation in the workplace, Don. I'm glad that you don't have to work in a place where conversations of pornography are the rule and not the exception, where discussions of human bodily functions and excretions occur on an almost daily basis.
Well, I don't feel at all degraded or oppressed by them.
Good for you.
In this context, anyway. It's not inappropriate in this workplace. Let's put it that way.
It's really, we're both asking for it in this case.
We are.
It's it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I have put, by the way, in your using that same magical science. Uh-huh. I put in your because the printer doesn't seem to want to.
Did you put something in my box, Rick Emerson?
That kind of language is inappropriate, Don, and you will be hearing from counsel. Yeah, in the Dropbox folder, there's the top five list for today. I was unable to get that too. Have you noticed occasionally? I don't mean to involve anybody else in our business here, but occasionally this printer just. It just decides to teach you a lesson now and again by not printing.
Yeah, I've had to use the find printer thing like 6 or 8 times since we put that printer in. It's like I still have the driver software installed. We're still on the network. Everything's fine. It's just every once in a while the printer just goes, no.
It's like I'm being caught in a turf war between the router and the printer and my laptop, where somebody has just decided it's not speaking to anybody else today until he takes back what he said about me yesterday.
Yeah.
And so they're just not going to, you know, acknowledge that the other exists. And meanwhile, I'm going, okay, that's all well and good. I need to print something, though.
It's pissy.
Jesus.
That printer.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program brought to you today and every day by a series of fine business partners, including CJ's High Climbing. And I should say that CJ's High Climbing, they will come to your home and they will help you with the maintenance issues that are sometimes messy or dangerous or unpleasant. And as part of that, we were talking about something that happened to listener Jenny and her husband Adam. And it turns out that actually Gary at CJ's High Climbing had heard that letter. And he said that it was actually, Jenny, if you're listening, he said it was actually so entertaining that he had actually stopped work and everyone there just literally gathered around the speaker to hear the story being told. Because apparently there's an astounding number of cases where they are called because someone is under the impression that they are able to navigate this sort of gravitational and, attractional difficulties involved in getting on top of your home, which is, you know, slanted in most cases. And also, it's kind of slick and wet and covered in moss.
You know, if I just shove the kid's swing set over underneath the tree, I can get up to the tree branch and then from there get to the roof.
And it is, and it's also that thing where, like, you sometimes aren't aware that they, like, you sort of take it for granted that everybody knows that you can't do that, Bob. That's a dumb idea. Don't be Velcroing ladders together. You figure it goes without saying. Like, you don't have to point it out until you hear, like, a strange clattering noise, and you look at him like, there's Granddad or whatever, and he's just, you know, and he's trying to rappel up onto the, you know, up into the roof like he's scaling the side of a window in Gotham or something. So, you know, if you feel like this might be an issue with, let's say, you know, your husband or your boyfriend or your dad or something, you might just want to keep this number, you know, like around. Just have it handy. It's 503-228-9278. Or here's the other thing. Look, you might actually just want to get it taken care of, like, without even really telling them, you know? So just, like, so they don't even really feel. See, that way you don't have to have the little discussion. Well, I'm going to go clean the gutters. No, Dad, they look clean to me. Well, boy, how do they do? How did that happen? I don't know, Dad. Must be magic. Why don't you come inside, huh? Have some cocoa. All right, thanks. You know, because the old people, it's like, I mean, it's their hips are basically just twigs in the Serengeti. You know, you just put the tiniest bit of pressure on them and they just, you know, they just splinter into a cloud of dust.
So, tell me about it.
You don't want to deal with that. So it's CJ'sHighClimbing.com. CJ'sHighClimbing.com is the website, or 503-228-9278. And here's the other thing. Speaking of looking at just finding, you know, seeing that everything is taken care of, and, you know, you're not going to have water pouring out of your downspout, and you're not going to have, like, just big weird green patches of, like, you know, lichen or something, you know, clinging to the side of your house. They're also not going to do this thing that sometimes happens, and usually is when you do it yourself, where, like, you will clean out the gutters, or you will clean off the roof or the underside or whatever, and then at the end, you've just got this huge, you were alluding to this last hour, just this huge, massive pile of, like, sludgy, slimy leaves, and you are so exhausted from having scooped out the gutter or having raked everything up, or you get the, you know, you get the thing where there's the huge slippery piles of just, you know, like decaying leaves and grass clippings from the summer and the spring, and you get it all put into a pile, you get it all scraped up and rounded up, and you are so just wet and tired and cranking and exhausted that the idea of now taking the time to bag all of that stuff and haul it down to the end of the driveway, you just want to kill yourself. So they actually do fantastic cleanup too, and it really is—it's one of their is one of their signatures, one of their trademarks at CJ's High Climbing. You're almost not—you know—if it weren't for the fact that everything is clean, you wouldn't even know they were there, because they're not just going to move everything from one place to another and leave the front of your the front of your house just you know, covered in filth. So CJ'sHighClimbing.com is the website. CJ'sHighClimbing.com or 503-228-9278. This is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Taser Watch.
Here is your Taser Watch for Friday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Oh, fail. There we go. Here is Don Taylor with your Taser Watch for Friday.
An Illinois man was tased and arrested Wednesday evening on several charges after causing a disturbance. Witnesses told police that Stephen D. McHenry III, 20, had driven twice down Pine Street in a reckless manner and later returned on foot carrying a hammer and two knives. Neighbors said McHenry was, quote, looking for whoever split his head open, unquote, although neighbors were not sure what he was talking about, and officers did not notice any visible injuries on him.
Okay.
After police arrived, McHenry made a verbal threat toward an officer and was handcuffed. He then made a racial slur toward a black female juvenile. McHenry also slammed himself against a cop car, teased a canine dog, and attempted to kick out a window while inside the car before he was tased. The knives and hammer were confiscated by a relative before police arrived. No injuries were reported. McHenry was booked on charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, disorderly conduct, reckless driving, hate crime, unlawful use of a weapon by a felon, and tampering with a police animal. He was transported to jail.
He'll be spending some time away. He's not going to be home anytime soon. He will be ensconced in the service of the state, I would imagine. Where was this?
This was Galesburg, Illinois, the land of Walt Whitman.
You would figure that, I mean, unless he's just flat out nuts, which sounds like it might be the case. If he was accusing somebody of having split his head open, I mean, unless it happened from the inside, which might not be on, you know, be beyond the realm of possibility. And did you ever, like, look around your neighborhood and you just see a guy that you figure, like, you will sort of transport yourself into some alternate future or a possible future where you are picturing yourself being interviewed on the news as the neighbor who was talking about the guy that you always knew was bad news?
Yeah.
He was going to go crazy. It was just like an eventuality that he would go nuts.
Yeah, you have that thought sometimes when you look around your neighborhood and you think, because whenever you see a story on the news sometimes and people are going, we had no idea. And then you think, you know, I really don't have any idea what's going on in my neighbor's homes. And then you have these, like, I had these people across the street that I think they belong to the SCA, like the Society for Creative Anachronism.
The sword fighting guys.
But God only knows what it was they were doing, because they would come and go, and sometimes in really strange clothes. And then I swear to God, they were welding something in their basement. We would see the light flashing in the basement window that looked like there was some kind of an arc welder going on down there. And we were like, we have no idea what they're doing. They could be building a dungeon. We don't know.
Rod Steiger's down there preparing to visit the Morlocks.
Yeah.
Jesus. Well, there's this guy, actually.
And then we wait to see if something will happen. And then, you know, then you're the guy on the news going, well, you know, we knew they were welding stuff and they had swords. But and then why didn't you alert the police? And say what?
Because if there's nothing going on, well, first of all, because if you call the cops, you look like some Gladys Kravitz type who's just, you know, snooping. And then, you know, if the neighbors are really up to nothing bad, I mean, if he's just like fixing a bicycle, then you look like, you know, then you just look bitchy and, you know, suspicious. But if he's really up to bad news and he somehow fools the man, then it's like it's your head in the camera bag later on.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a lesson I learned when I lived down the street from where we live now. Laura and I used to live at this. I would say that it's like a gated, but that makes it sound like an upscale community. But it was like, I think, to keep us in, not to keep anybody out. It was directly across the street from the sex club, 39th and from Cesar Chavez Boulevard. And do you find yourself doing this?
The place that my husband refers to now as Angel's F Spot.
Exactly. Do you find yourself, maybe now because you don't live in Southeast, referring to it as 39th? And then you catch yourself and you realize, okay, it's really not called 39th anymore. Not really.
It is now. I always call it 39th.
Okay. But see, I do too, because it's where I've lived, you know, most of the time I've been in Portland. And then I stop and I think to myself, okay, wait a minute. Is this now one of those forks in the road to, like, Oldsterville? Is this the moment where I choose whether to become Grandpa Simpson or not?
Yeah. When I lived in North Portland, they changed Portland Boulevard to Rosa Parks. And I could never think to call it Rosa Parks. And then if I would see something on the news or something where they would say something was on Rosa Parks, I'd go, where is that again?
They mean interstate, honey.
It's like, oh, yeah, it's 6 blocks from here. But it's like, no, it's, you know.
See, and that's the thing. And so, like, I call it 39th just because it's not even because, like, that's what it's always been. It's just because it's like a verbal muscle memory. I call it 39th because that's what I've usually called it. But then sometimes I will be saying that out loud. I'll be like, well, I live, you know, over on 39th and, you know, like, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I'll be talking. And then I start to judge. Then I start to think about the person to whom I'm speaking. And I think, do they think I'm a racist? Because everybody knows the guy who was like, I'm not going to call that MLK. It's, you know, that's always been 10th. Everybody knows somebody who, because they're just a jackass. It's like some ideological thing where they won't call it Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard or whatever. Mm. And I don't want to be that guy, and I'm not that guy. But
I have nothing against Cesar Chavez personally, and I think he did a lot of really awesome stuff. But I still think that changing the name of 39th to Cesar Chavez
is a bad idea.
Which is a bad, stupid idea.
It is a dumb idea. But my whole thing is like, I don't want people to think I'm a racist because I'm not. Rick Emerson embraces all colors and creeds.
Rick won't call it Chavez Boulevard because he doesn't like Mexican people.
And so then I think, well, maybe I should start calling it Cesar Chavez Boulevard. Also because with every passing year, that is going to be what more and more people call it. I mean, it may take time, but eventually that's what people will call it because that's what the GPS calls it now.
Maybe right now we could just start calling it C-Chav and see if we get people saying that.
That sounds like some sort of a, that sounds like an airport somewhere.
C-Chav.
And then this is the final level of my white man's neuroses. This really is the white man's burden, by the way, where you just have to sit and analyze every goddamn thought that comes out of your head to, like, what will the people at NPR think of me? Will I be fired? Because then I start to think, well, okay, if I'm calling it Cesar Chavez Boulevard, am I then going to have to, A, waste time by stopping to explain to everybody else, no, I really mean 39th, and am I going to have to tolerate like a bunch of lectures You know, from my friends who were like, you're just being politically correct. It's 39th. And then it just gets me involved in this whole discussion with, like, everybody I know.
I think the key, then, the answer is just to never go to that neighborhood and never talk about it.
If only you'd been my realtor or if only you'd been the one who ran the webpage that I went to when I first moved here. Where should I live? Southeast Portland. That looks like a fine place. What could go wrong? Did we talk about Castalia Language Center already?
We did not.
It's just a coincidence. This is coming after the Cesar Chavez thing.
Or was it a canny segue?
Well, Don, a magician doesn't like to give away his tricks. I will say, just as I was noting, that with every passing year, more people call it Cesar Chavez Boulevard because that's just what it's called now. And, you know, like my TomTom, that my car already out of date because it calls it 39th. Yet the GPS, my phone, it calls it Kazir Chavis or whatever. It's got the weird, like, bad phonetic pronunciation in my iPhone. But here is a truism that with every passing year, nay, every passing moment, the Spanish is ever closer to being, it probably is. I mean, if we had to judge it right now, probably is the second most widely used language in the world. That would be my guess. It is the second most widely used language in America. And at some point, it will be on equal footing with English, or probably surpass English, I would imagine. It would astound me if that wasn't the case. And so for that reason, and also just because, you know, you should learn a second language because it's good for your brain. It just makes your brain work better and faster. It keeps you younger upstairs, keeps you from feeling like somebody split open your head from the inside, you know. So contact Castalia Language Center at portlandspanish.com. That is their website, portlandspanish.com. That's how you find out more about them. They offer Spanish language classes for adults, which is sort of code for old people in my case, but anybody who's out of high school or out of college, because once you, leave our centers of public learning, your brain, at that age just starts working a little bit differently, and your brain basically starts to, it's like a strip mall where nobody really goes to the photocopy place anymore. They just go to the yogurt place and the Pilates place. And so, the photocopy place, that gets shuttered after a while. Maybe you don't really check it all that often. Maybe that gone, that back in 5 minutes sign, maybe that's been up there for many, many months. Your brain starts to do that with language centers because it figures, hey, you speak English, that's the only language you're going to learn. Fine, we're going to close up this other stuff. We're going to put it away. If nobody's going to eat this last slice, we're going to wrap it and stick it in the fridge. And so, you've got to get your brain used to the fact that it's going to be learning another language, but it does keep you mentally agile longer. The point is you want to learn with other adults the same rate, the same way. You find out more by going to Castalia Language Center's website. That is portlandspanish.com. Portlandspanish.com. That's how you find out about Castalia Language Center. They are a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show and the Emerson News Network. And they help you speak conversationally by helping you learn via conversation. So you're not just going to have to have some horrible flashback of high school. You're just memorizing things and spitting it back out without really knowing what you're talking about. Portlandspanish.com is the website for Castalia Language Center. Portlandspanish.com. Shall we do our top five, Don Taylor?
Oh, yes, please.
Here is your top five for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do.
Wow, wow.
Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
I'm certainly not going to sample that and use it later. Here's a... Don Taylor with your top five serial killer songs. And I really have no motivation. It wasn't a Dexter thing. I don't know why this occurred to me. I was leaving the house yesterday. It's like, should I do a top five? What am I into? Serial killing. And then within about a block, I had like four of the six here. These are the top five serial killer songs of all time right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
The honorable mention is AC/DC Night Prowler.
Now, this is honorable mention because this is, of course... You could argue that the song is about a serial killer, although I don't know that that's ever made explicitly clear. It's about a murderer, clearly. It is about a killer. I'm not sure that it's a serial killer. The other reason it's honorable mention is because there's a lot of sort of interwoven threads here, because this song was said to be one of the inspirations for Richard Ramirez, who was the Night Stalker in Los Angeles, alias the creepy guy with the bad teeth and the pentagram on the hand. And so he was a huge AC/DC fan, which is the sort of... That's the thing when they say...
Didn't he leave, like, a hat at one of the crime scenes, like an AC/DC hat?
I believe he did. I think it got caught on a gate. He was running from the man over some cyclone fencing, and his hat got stuck on the top of it. They'll say the thing, but there's no bad publicity. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but it seems like if you were in a band and you saw that guy on television going, you know, like, Rick Emerson rules, also I killed a bunch of people. Maybe, you know.
Hail Satan.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, I guess we won't really know till that happens. So, you know.
Oh, and it will happen.
But so this song retroactively became about Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. This is the final track on their 1979 album, Highway to Hell. I love AC/DC. It's amazing how versatile, like the same handful of chords and the same one vocal style can be with these guys. Because there's really no additional instrumentation, like, ever, except for bagpipes once in an AC/DC song. And yet they can just convey an entire palette of tones and, you know, song stylings with just the same arrangement, the same producer, the same guitar tone. You know, for like 40 albums in a row.
My husband is a quite a big AC/DC fan, and you know, when we first got together, it's like we gave each other a hard time about the areas where our musical tastes did not overlap. And I would give him a hard time about the dinosaur rock, and he would give me a hard time about, you know, the emo Counting Crows Elvis Costello stuff. But I have to admit that the 11, 12 years we've been together, I've actually developed an appreciation I did not think I would ever have for both AC/DC and Black Sabbath.
Oh yeah,
you know, because they were bands that I never listened to, and I actually thought I disliked, but realized I'd never ever really given them a fair shake.
AC/DC are sort of they're a kind of musical cousin to the Ramones in many ways, in that they do one thing that has very few moving parts to it. And they do it really, really well. And they realized, I think, early on, like, this is kind of all we can do. So let's try to do it as... Let's do it as well as we possibly can. And so, again, with just... You know, it's not like they're skilled musicians in the classical sense. But with, I would say, a limited number of tools in their chest, they have... I mean, they're on, you know, however many albums, like 17 records or something. You know, and... As much as people joke about one song sounding just like the next, it's really not true. I mean, they really have just a massive amount of variety where they really shouldn't have. Just a great song, though. These are the top five songs about serial killers. Dawn Taylor, what might number five be?
Number five is Jane's Addiction, Ted Just Admit It.
Which is about a great number of things, including Mr. Ted Bundy. I think the song actually samples...
It does. Interview audio
where he's like talking about that he's blaming porn for killing a bunch of people. I hadn't even thought about this song in probably 12 years until I was trying to come up with this list. I now realize why I hadn't thought about this song in like 12 years.
Because it's not very good?
It's not very good.
No.
God, I remember just being in high school. My friend Jeremy was just like the biggest freak on earth for Jane's Addiction, and he had this album, The Ritual de l'Habituel or whatever. Nothing Shocking, I guess, is what this is from.
Yeah.
And he was just... He was just like they all were. He was just a huge... There were no casual Jane's Addiction fans. He was just a fiend for it. And I remember listening to it and just... And sort of trying to get the deal, trying to understand why he was so over the moon for Jane's Addiction and not getting it.
There's a slightly better version of this song on the Natural Born Killers soundtrack.
That's right.
That actually trades out the Ted Bundy sample for
Julia Lewis.
Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. So what am I thinking of then? I'm thinking of something else. And so what is Screamin' Jay Hawkins doing? Is it?
It's a sample from I Put a Spell on You.
Oh, okay. And by the way, for anybody out there who's preparing a hate mail for this song being higher than AC/DC, this is about an actual real serial killer, which is why it's... Otherwise, there's just no way that this would... I mean... This is the sound of Perry Farrell just stealing your money and giving you nothing in return. This is the sound of a man laughing as he takes your $9.98 from you. Don't do drugs, kids. All right, these are the top five songs about serial killers. Dawn Taylor, number four.
Ozzy Osbourne, Bloodbath in Paradise.
So this is a little contentious because you and I were talking yesterday about, you asked about the I Don't Like Mondays chick. Mm. And I said, well, that was more of a spree killing or, you know, mass murder. So Bloodbath in Paradise is about the Manson family, who are not technically serial killers, but then again, neither is Ed Gein. It's a more, it's a sort of, it's a sort of colloquial thing.
I would actually say that the Manson family qualify though as serial killers because
couple different nights, couple different places.
There's also it's sort of, I don't know if it was ever cleared up, but weren't there a couple of bodies found.
At Spahn Ranch?
At Spahn Ranch.
Well, I don't think they ever found the bodies, but I think the family said they were there.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was a thing, I think, last year where they went back there with some of that new thing where they drag the box around and it's like sonar of the ground.
Yeah.
Because they are, I mean, everybody is convinced that there are other bodies, including mm-hmm. that of their attorney, by the way, who was not apparently doing a sufficient job of defending them. And he just vanished. Where's your attorney? I don't know. Man, he never showed up. Wow. You know, and just,
and, like, Tex Watson, like, vanished or something, didn't he? And
yeah, I think it was a lot of people that they just, I don't know, he was here a second ago. He was standing next to Charles Manson. Where did he go?
And also the thing is that with the way that the LoBianco murders took place and the way that the Polanski murders took place, it's pretty obvious that if they hadn't been caught right away.
Oh, they were on their way to a whole lot more.
They would have kept going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is from one of the finer Ozzy Osbourne albums. This is from No Rest for the Wicked.
This was the first album with Zakk Wylde on guitar.
Why do you know that?
Because it's on Wikipedia and
freaking
I've got it
freaking me out.
Here.
All right. Okay. Yeah. You shouldn't have told me.
Yeah, I
was
just
really
seemed like
impressed
I knew
there.
What I was talking about.
Seriously. That weirded me out. In a way, I'm kind of glad you didn't know that because that just upended all that I thought I understood about the universe.
Yeah. Sometimes I do, like, know stuff that I probably shouldn't know, but that wasn't one of those things. This is one of only, like, two of the songs that I had already previously kind of guessed. So, a couple of these I never even heard of.
I figured that you would know about half of these songs, maybe. All right. These are the top five songs about... Have I shown you my piece of Sharon Tate's fireplace?
You have not.
I'll have to bring that in. We should have a whole show and tell.
Okay.
I'll bring my skull. These are the... Well, not mine. His name is George. These are the top five songs about serial killers. Dawn Taylor.
Number three is Slayer. Is it 213 or 213?
213. All right.
This is a song I'm not familiar with.
All right, so. Slayer, angry emailer guy. So this is an email I got last night. This is a preemptively angry email from a listener named Rick. And he says, subject line, top five songs. Okay, here is your obligatory Slayer comment. Any list of songs about serial killers that does not include Dead Skin Mask is a list is a list for effing pussies. Thank you and have a great weekend. Signed, Rick. So it's no Dead Skin Mask.
So is this about Dahmer?
This is Jeffrey Dahmer.
Okay.
It's apartment 213.
Gotcha. That's what I was trying to make some kind of connection, and that's the only one I could.
And, it's like everything else Slayer does. It's also kind of about, like, Nazis and Satan, I guess, and just, you know, Ooga Booga. And sort of a general screamy kind of malaise. A general disdain for all things.
I always wonder about, like, the day-to-day lifestyle of guys in bands like Slayer. If, like, when they're not playing this music, if they're just, like, la-la-la, whistling a happy song, going out in the sunshine, getting coffee, pushing their kid in a stroller.
Having a Hot Pocket.
And it's like, well, time to go to work and hail Satan. You know, I...
sort of clocking in, like a Morning Sam, Morning Ralph kind of thing. Hail Satan, Tom. Hail Satan, Carrie. Kerry King from Slayer does seem legitimately to live the lifestyle. The last time I saw him, he just shaved his head, and I think he tattooed an iron cross, like, above each ear. The other guys all seem to... It's just sort of a paycheck. Paycheck's the wrong way to put it. That sounds too cynical. The other guys in the band, it's just like... It just happened to be the thing they started writing about. It's like, you know who's really normal? Are the guys in Cannibal Corpse. And if you're familiar at all with the Cannibal Corpse subject matter and cover art and lyrics... It's like you just expect them to be living in a stool pit somewhere filled with teeth. But then you see them and, you know, it's just, It's like, what do you do? Well, I'm studying origami right now. And, you know, and then I'm going to be wakeboarding later on today. And then, you know, and then I have a watercolor class later in the night. And then you hear them sing and it's just a whole lot of like, I'm drinking a maggot-filled skull, you know, and it's, so.
Yeah, I don't think I ever really thought about it until I saw an interview with Marilyn Manson where it was one of the rare interviews where he just decided to drop the whole, you know.
I'm spooky.
The whole spooky thing and was just talking about stuff. Yeah, I play video games and hang out and play with my dog. And you're kind of like, you know, basically, you know, he takes off the black nail polish and takes out the contacts. And he's just a dork who was the band major.
Just a guy named Brian.
He was like the band, the majorette guy. The whatever you call it, the guy in the big fur hat
with the baton, like leading the crowd.
Yes, I there was a picture of that on a website someplace. He was a phenomenal dork,
of course,
when he was in high school, and then so you know you could see why he decided to be Marilyn Manson.
No one invents themselves that entirely if the existing self wasn't lame.
Yeah.
All right, here's your Slayer for like the year. Did you really know that 213 was a Dahmer reference?
That I do. When I didn't. I was like, 2 and 3. And when you said 213, I thought, oh, I'll bet it's Dahmer's. Well, I told you the thing about how a few years, about six, seven years ago, his attorney was going to sell off like everything in his apartment.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And I actually wanted to like buy a plane ticket and go to Wisconsin.
For the auction.
And go to the auction because I wanted something from his kitchen. Anything from his kitchen. I just wanted like Dahmer Tupperware. Dahmer's can opener, anything from his kitchen.
These are the top five songs about serial killers. Don Taylor, what might number two be?
Number two is Motorhead, Jack the Ripper. I love this song. Talk about going from just, you know, one extreme to the other, from Slayer to Motorhead.
You know, the thing about Lemmy is, do you realize that Lemmy is... One, two, he's 65. And granted, this is a song from about 15 years ago, but still, I'll guarantee you that, like, and he puts out, like, an album a month. I mean, they have, like, forever. Whatever he put out last month is still harder and tougher than, like, anything else you can buy anywhere.
So, Rick, who would win in a fight? Lemmy or God?
That's a trick question, Don. Lemmy is God. I've seen Motorhead three or four times, and I've quit seeing them because, as my friend Rob once said, they're so loud it makes me physically ill. The last time I saw Motorhead was at the Roseland about a year and a half ago. I had brand new $35 Sonic 2 earplugs, which are like, they're about as good as you can get without putting those huge, like, things over your ears, like the big 70s earphone things. And it was like he was inside my brain, hammering on my, on my synapses with a crowbar, and then mocking me as he did so. It was so loud, it hurt. It hurt.
I saw a band back in the day when I was a punk rock kid. It was either at the Starwood or at the Whiskey at Go-Go. I can't remember which. A band called 45 Grave, and we ended up having to a friend of mine and I. We had actually had to leave the club and go out in the parking lot. And the band was so loud outside in the parking lot that it still hurt. And I had a sore throat for 2 days because it damaged my ears so badly.
So you're a block away and it's still just wailing away at inhuman volume levels. All right.
Number one. Are we ready yet?
I think
Please.
So. All right. These are the top five songs about serial killers. Then we'll get out of here and make way for the fun employment guys to get in here. Don Taylor.
Number one, The Rolling Stones' "Midnight Rambler,"
which is about the Boston Strangler,
Albert Salvo.
And I, well done. And I, you know, I don't know that I personally put this above, you know, like the Ozzy song or Motorhead or whatever. But I mean, I'm trying to be objective about this, and it's the Stones, and I actually don't care for the song much at all. I mean, it's okay, but I personally,
it's not better Stones.
It's like 8 minutes long too, and there's no Stone song that needs to be 8 minutes long. It's like, Can't You Hear Me Knocking? I get about halfway through, and I'm like, done, and I just skip to the next thing.
And it has harmonica.
Yeah, you know, to me, it just sort of, it's that thing on the Hot Rocks album that comes between other songs that I like a lot more that I have to sort of, you know, that I have to skip past. All right. Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler coming up next with Fun Employment Radio. You can hear it tonight at funemploymentradio.com. Funemploymentradio.com. That is updated each and every weekday, Monday through Friday. Don't forget, they're going to join us on Monday's program as well. Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler will be here on Monday. Also Monday, following the Rick Emerson Show on Monday, all next week up through Halloween when we'll do a marathon. We'll have one episode every day of AZ, the original zombie radio drama created by Jason Crump and Aaron Duran. That starts Monday after the Rick Emerson Radio program. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the... I started to do an old thing there because I said Sarah and it triggered an old version of the thing that I did instead of the new version of the thing that I do now. But stop. Reset. Stop. Reverse that. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, and Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Legion of News is next, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. And we'll see you Monday at noon for Legion of News. Have a great weekend. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you Monday. Bye now.